with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is only fitting that this program this evening begin with gratitude and thanks. Well, something amazing happened last night. No, I didn't win the lottery or anything, but from where I stand, this felt like a whole lot like it. Really. For several days we've been talking about the Democracy for America scholarships to Netroots Nation. And I explained that a component of the selection process had to do with online voting. And John Fox and ELO put up easy links at the headonradionetwork.com site so folks could use that and go and vote for, well, it's under my name, but it's the horn that's going. And we were the word went out into the environmental community. The word went out all over the horn. People were telling their individual friends, asking for votes. And then last night something happened. So we closed the program at about 9 p.m. last night with something like 74 votes and seventh place. And that is when our buddy Spike, whom you've heard on the program a number of occasions, gonzo greetings, he says, Spike. Our buddy Spike took it upon himself to contact our dear friend Mike Malloy, asking Mike to ask the Truth Seekers to help put our candidacy, our application, if you will, over the top. And wow, did they ever. By the way, if you're one of those voters from the Malloy Truth Seeker crew who has never heard this program, and you might be checking it out for the first time, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. From all of us at the Horn, thank you. Because doing what we hope to do at Netroots Nation is going to take a cooperative effort. I'm going to be there. I have hopes that Guy James will be there. The whole the Kincaid whole fam damily will be there. And it is our hope to bring you every uttered word from every session of every seminar, every discussion that takes place at Netroots Nation. It's going to take a whole bunch of work that hasn't even begun to be done yet. But last night we took a massively substantial step forward. Thank you. Thanks to the good offices and good graces of Mike Malloy and Kathy Bay and of all the dedicated folks who share their time with them from 9 to 12 Eastern every night. You know, I'm one of those people. I've been one of those people for years. I was a Malloy truth seeker long before I climbed back behind the microphone and decided to give radio one last good swing. So our buddy Spike, the initiative he showed was just amazing. And then the truth seekers, who decided they wanted somebody to whom Mike gave recommendation to be at Netroots Nation. Let me explain what happened. Let me go. Let me just go and see what the numbers are looking like right now. Pardon the clacking. No, there's no Y in Netroots Nation. That's not even where I'm going. DemocracyForAmerica.com. This is the boring part of the program because Bob can't type and talk at the same time. At the beginning of the night last night, we were, at the end of the show last night, we were at 74 votes. And just hoping to sort of maybe crack the top four. As it stands now, and supposedly voting closed at midnight Eastern time, and if that's the case, we came out clearly number one. But the votes continue to climb. And we went from 74 then to, as I speak, 304 votes now. And it was a humbling, exciting thing to behold. A lot of other good people pursuing these scholarships as well. It's my understanding that Democracy for America will choose at least 9 scholarship winners. Winning the first round of online support is not by any means an indication of outright victory. There are other criteria that are put into use as well. But this has to count for a lot, I would hope. From 74 to 304. Wow, I can't even begin to do the math. That's 230 votes? That's astonishing. And so thank you to everyone, and especially the truth seekers, who helped make this happen. We will do everything in our power to live up to your expression of your support. You have my word on that. Now, let's see. Juanita chimes in. Wonderful. Hooray. Thank you, Mike Malloy, for your assistance. I'm so happy for you, Bob. That from Juanita, our Central Florida View correspondent. And it's, like I said, it's gonna take a lot of doing to get there. It's only, you know, what, 3 hours from here to Pittsburgh? It's a nice drive up straight up US 19 and then straight up I-79 and bang, you're there. Pop out of the Fort Pitt tunnels and you're eye level with the top of the PPG building, looking down on that magnificent triangle, where the, Monongahela and the Allegheny come together to form the headwaters of the Ohio River. Wow. If there are any exceptions for, I don't know if there are any exceptions to this, for a first view, a first sudden view of a city in the United States, nothing, to my mind, can top that just in your face, out of the tunnel, view of Pittsburgh for just breathtaking beauty. I've seen it in the fog. I've seen it in the snow. I've seen it in the rain, and I've seen it in bright blue sky and sunshine. And it has never failed to just absolutely captivate me. So we're looking forward to that trip, but I've been trying to figure out what's going to be involved. See, the way the scheduling is working out is quite exciting. There will be 5 sessions going on, 5 different rooms at all times. And it is our intent to have audio coming from every one of them so that people can choose which streams they want to hear and which topics they want to listen to and hopefully participate in. Because one way or another, we hope to have a chat room open in each for each session, so that there can be input to the session from a remote distance, from people listening at a distance. That means 5 computers, plus a couple for backup. That means five audio interfaces, be they mixing boards or little gizmo boxes, whatever. We hope to do video as well. So that means five video cameras. What we're doing here is we are we're sort of expanding or acting on an expanding vision of the horn. There are lots of these events, meetings, conventions, convocations, comings together. And frankly, they deserve to be heard. And people, liberals across the United States and across the globe need to be able to participate. Because being liberals, we do not have the vast resources and the vast wealth that the right wing does. And if we want to bring people together, we had better be ready to use the absolute cutting edge of technology in order to accomplish it. Well, it is our goal at the Horn to do precisely that. We want to create the means by which we can jump on the road and go somewhere, and with nothing more complicated than a little bit of electricity and a solid internet connection, bring something worldwide that would not otherwise be heard. I think there's a place for that in the liberal universe. I think there had better be a place for that in the liberal universe, or we're going to have a hard time maintaining our momentum. So this event, Netroots Nation in Pittsburgh, is a test of that theory. And it is going to be quite, what's the recent phrase in government? It is going to be quite the stress test. Or, as we say in the Hills, stretch test. Went to the doctor and had a stretch test. I'm looking forward to it. And when I think about the fact that it is only a matter of, it's exactly 3 months away today. Exactly 3 months away today. I recognize how much work there is to be done, and it is a joyful work. But that will mean a couple of computers to be built, some equipment to be obtained, and frankly, get there and back, which means fuel, which just went up 15 cents a gallon here in my locality. Thanks, Exxon! Love you. Don't mean it. That's where we stand. And I hope you will. Participate and offer me your thoughts, your considered ideas for how we can make this happen. So none of this. I don't think we would be talking about it. Were it not for the committed efforts of so many people to put us over the top. I had no idea. You know, when my show closed, I didn't know Spike was going to drop the dime to Malloy. And I had no idea that we would even have a chance. But I am a little bit kind of tired because several of us sat up in the chat room rather late, watching the tallies come in. It was like election night, frankly. Agnes and Sue, ELO, were on the phone, as well as Cobwebs in the chat room, keeping track of things. It was fun. It was amazing to watch. Agnes is gesturing at me.
And we bow at Sue's shrine.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, we worship at our shrine every day. So, it wouldn't have been appropriate to start the program with anything other than profound thanks to the people who made this happen. Like I said, I'm still stunned. And there is a functionality at Democracy for America whereby one may become friends, you know, sort of like Facebook and stuff. One may become friends through one's networking there. I hope I didn't miss anybody, but I was sitting there just clicking and clicking and clicking and clicking, sending messages, sending thank yous. You know, Mama always raised me when somebody does something nice for you, you got to send a thank you note. And so that's what I did last night. I sent out a couple of hundred or so thank you notes to everyone who participated and helped. If I missed you, shoot me an email and I will thank you that way. Because I cannot vouchsafe, because after a while, that many little links begin to sort of swim in front of your eyes. I may have thanked a couple of people two or three times, or friended them that many times, or skipped over it, but I tried not to. So if I missed you, let me know, and you have my apologies for the rank incompetence, but the attempt to express gratitude was there. And it is profound gratitude. Let's see, coming up in just a very few short moments, let's see, about 17 minutes past the hour, just in a few short moments, we will be joined on the phone by none other than the editor of the Progressive magazine, Matt Rothschild. You know, we have a lot of commentary, bits and news reports and things like that. On the program, you hear Matt Rothschild's Progressive Minute. You hear labor news from Labor Radio. A number of such reports. But, you know, I have to say that without a doubt, I am consistently in agreement with Matt Rothschild's commentaries more than I am just about anybody else's. Because Matt gets it. Matt gets it big time. So I'm looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have in a few minutes. The Progressive, if you can, you know, we talk about the absence of liberal media, and yet the Progressive magazine has been around, no kidding, for 100 years. That's a whole bunch of liberal thinking and a whole bunch of liberal advocacy. And so we'll be talking about some of that this evening. They recently had a huge, at the beginning of the month of May, they had a big 100th anniversary celebration out in Madison, Wisconsin, which is, after all, the home of the Progressive. Would have loved to have been there for that. Would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that. All kinds of folks were there. Among them, our good friend Jim Hightower was there. I'm not sure, but I believe our political hero, Dennis Kucinich, may have showed up for it. It was a who's who of the liberal thinking, liberal writing, liberal broadcasting, and must have really been something. So here's wishing the Progressive another 100 years, because it is a vital and needed voice in the ongoing debate of exactly what America is and how America is and where America is. So that's coming up in about 10 minutes. Agnes will get on the phone here in a couple and make sure that we are well connected with Matt Rothschild. Let's do start the evening, though, with a little bit of fun. You know, his were 4 years in the governor's office, not marked by anything particularly earth-shattering. And I'm not exactly on the same page with him politically with a lot of what he says. But you got to respect Jesse Ventura from time to time. Jesse went on, as he has on a number of occasions, Jesse went on Larry King live sorta. You know, Larry King Automatron. No, Larry King Live on CNN. I should take it easy on Larry. He's only 500 years old. That's, you know, 400 or some short of Methuselah, and he's well on the way. But he went on Larry King Live to talk about waterboarding. Talked about torture in particular. And this audio was the result, and it is something, it's a beautiful thing. Just let it speak for itself.
This just in from Roger Neal. He's with the PR firm that represents the Miss California organization. Carrie Prejean nor any of her reps ever asked permission of Miss California USA pageant officials for Carrie to appear at the National Organization for Marriage press conference. There was never any behind-the-scenes talks. This statement by Miss Gallagher is 100% untrue. For Maggie to even suggest that this happened is an untruth. Everything Carrie has done from 2 days after Miss USA through today has been without permission from the directors of the Miss California USA pageant. What do you make of that squabble?
I think it's much ado about nothing.
What do you think?
I'm living there.
I don't think marriage should even be in government. I think it should only be decided in the private sector. That way, if the church doesn't want to recognize that they're the private sector, they can so choose. The government should only recognize civil unions.
Well, okay,
that way
I'm
you
with
don't
that.
Have to put down what sex you are.
Would you go on the Supreme Court? You don't have to be a lawyer.
Would I go on it? No. It would take me too much from surfing. You ready for my poem now, Larry?
Go. The poem of
Here we go. On the night that Jesus Christ supposedly rose from the dead, the Navy SEALs shot three pirates straight through the head.
That's right. That was the date, right?
That's
Whoa,
right.
Whoa, you're going to make it a song. What about that story with the SEALs?
Well, they did their job. No, not a bit.
They're sharpshooters?
They're highly trained. They're the best we have, and it didn't surprise me a bit that they were that successful because they're the best trained men we have.
Boulder, Colorado, a call for Jesse Ventura. Hello.
Hi, Governor Ventura. I was just wondering, you said you moved to Mexico. Is that because you're so dissatisfied with politics in general in the United States? And would you consider moving back because we really need people like you and your voice here in the United States?
I still live here half the year. No, I moved to Mexico because of the weather and the surfing and the lifestyle. I live an hour from pavement and an hour from electricity. I live off the grid down there. And that changes your whole perspective of the world when you do that.
Lakewood, California.
No, Jesse, don't let the friends of coal hear you say that, buddy. They'll hook you right up. They want you on that grid. They want them mountains blowing up for your electricity, Jesse. Hallelujah.
Hello. Lakewood, are you there?
Yeah, Mr. Ventura.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why don't you get involved with the Congress in the discussion about waterboarding, since you have the experience and the personal knowledge that it's torture, disputing chains.
Here comes the fun.
Well, first of all, they didn't ask me, and second of all, anybody that's ever been waterboarded will tell you it's torture. Dick Cheney has never even been in the service. And in fact, had Dick Cheney gone in the service, he would have never shot that guy, because there's not an accident with a weapon. You don't have an accident. It's you don't know what you're doing.
Did the North Vietnamese, Viet Cong use waterboarding?
I assume they did.
Has it been widely used in war and you capture prisoners?
Well,
Germans use it?
We were using it at SEER school back in 1970 when I went through SEER school and survival, escape, resistance, and evasion. That's where I was waterboarded. All of us were. And apparently that's what they were using there because they were trying to prepare you for it.
What was the purpose of waterboarding our own servicemen?
I don't know. I guess so you'd know if you got captured that this is what you could face, I guess. I know for a fact it was worthless to us because everybody in my platoon, we all took a vow that we'll go out in a blaze of glory. We'll never get captured.
Is it true that a lot of time extreme torture works in reverse and they lie?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why torture's no good in a court of law. Because if you're torturing someone, they are going to tell you what they think you want to hear to stop the torture. Let me say this. They say it's prevented things by us torturing.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then why haven't we caught bin Laden? Because we got his people, And if we tortured him, they ought to be able to tell us where he's at. See, it don't work. We haven't captured bin Laden. We haven't done anything. Torture does not work. Larry,
thank you, my
man. Pleasure.
Jesse Ventura, don't forget, Don't Start the Revolution Without Me is out in paperback. I want to remind you about Whoopi.
And there you go. Why is this such a difficult concept? You've got, as John Stewart pointed out, John Oliver, in a segment on The Daily Show, with good fun, you've got the right wing having a purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy over jokes by Wanda Sykes about, a junkie, Rush Limbaugh. And they're responding to that with more vociferous angst and anguish and anger than they respond to attempted murder. Kind of makes your eyes roll back in their sockets, doesn't it? Really. We're talking about people, these hardcore Repiglicans, these Cheneyites and so forth. Who have some, what was the phrase we used a few weeks ago? People with broken brains? This is what we're talking, really. People with broken brains. Because if you are more outraged by a sharp, acerbic comment about a junky, right-wing, bloviating gas bag than you are about murder and torture committed in the name of your nation, I submit that you have something badly wrong with your brain. It doesn't work right. You probably walk around licking your fingers and sticking them in electric sockets for the fun of it. 'Cause your brain don't work right. That's the mindset, that's the failure of your mind you have to get to that place where, torture is obviously very effective. I remember when criticizing the Iraq War was grounds to have my patriotism and my qualities of citizenship called into question. Well, conversely, I call the Americanism of anybody who advocates the rightness of torture into question. And here's the fun part. I do it from pretty solid moral ground. On the phone with us right now, celebrating their 100th anniversary of the Progressive Magazine, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, Matt Rothschild. I've already told you about what Matt does and what's going on right now. Let's bring Matt on. Matt, thanks so much for taking time to join us.
No problem, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
It's a real joy to have you because, one way or another, we hear you just about every day through the Progressive Minute. And,
I appreciate that too.
I told the audience, earlier that, if there's anybody out there with whom I find myself in near 100% agreement, it would have to be you. Tell us a little, if there's anybody out there who isn't familiar with the Progressive, tell us its origins and where it is and where it's going right now.
Sure, but I got to say, my wife only agrees with me about 70% of the time, so you're ahead of her. The Progressive was founded in 1909 by Fighting Bob La Follette, the senator from Wisconsin, who was one of the pioneers of the progressive movement. And he, unlike Teddy Roosevelt, who was also a progressive, Fighting Bob La Follette was not an imperialist. Teddy Roosevelt never met a war he didn't like. But La Follette differed with Teddy Roosevelt on that and so pushed the progressive movement that we're a part of in this direction of opposing not only corporate power but U.S. interventions in places, well, today like Iraq, but back in his day, World War One, or invading Mexico or going to Haiti or Nicaragua. So that was really the outset of the Progressive magazine. Originally, actually, it was called La Follette's Weekly after the founder.
Well, considering the times in which the Progressive came into being, founded in 1909, Matt, just a few short years later, you had the First World War coming along and a real First Amendment crackdown. How did the Progressive manage to survive that particularly bleak period of First Amendment the censorship via the post office and the postmaster and so forth?
Well, it's an excellent question because there was questions as to whether the magazine would be able to get carried through the post office. There was a question as to whether LaFalde himself would get expelled from the Senate. He was called a traitor. He was hanged and burned in effigy, and he was just barely able to keep on holding on to a Senate seat. But maybe because he was a senator, he was allowed to keep publishing the Progressive, whereas people like Eugene Victor Debs, who headed the Socialist Party, was imprisoned for telling people not to enlist or not to accept being drafted into the World War One. So LaFollette's speeches in 1917, why I'd give my whole life to be fighting Bob LaFollette in 1917, so courageous was his stance back then. His speeches that we reproduce in this book of ours, Democracy in Print, The Best of the Progressive, they're amazing descriptions of the need for people to stand up and protest, even or especially during wartime, the need for Congress to get up on its own two legs and oppose the president for his conduct in such a war. I mean, during the Iraq War, the start of the Iraq War, if you went back and read what LaFollette was saying in 1917, you would have said, wow, it could have been said right now.
Well, you know, one of the things that just blew my mind a couple of weeks ago, I was over at the website, and I noticed where you had reprinted articles from the Great Depression.
The stuff we printed in the 1930s about bailing out the banks or businessmen then and now was something we published in 1934, Bob, where there was a guy saying, you know, about the businessmen. They strutted up and down the avenue. They were freeborn, 100% American big businessmen who took back talk from nobody. Now they take a handout wherever they can get it. Well, that's what's been going on right now on Wall Street. It's just ridiculous, the bailout of these banks.
I would have sworn that I was reading something that was written 3 weeks ago, not 70 years ago. And that's the history of the Progressive, isn't it? Its hallmark has been its prescience, has it not?
Yeah, it's been ahead of the game for so much of the last century. Part of the greatness of looking over 100 years is to see the progress we made. 100 years ago, women didn't have the right to vote. The Progressive was a suffragist magazine. The Progressive stood for civil rights for African Americans. We made a lot of gains on that issue as well. But on some of these issues, like corporate power, like Congress bowing down to the banks, why, just, you know, a few days ago, Dick Durbin said the banks own Congress. Well, that was exactly what the Progressive was saying in the 1930s, so we haven't made that much progress on that issue. We haven't made progress on universal health care. In 1909, Jane Addams in the pages of the Progressive was talking about the need for universal health care. So that's a little bit bracing, you know, when you go back and see how far we still have to go.
It certainly gives you a long view of how hard the fight has been and how sustained the struggle has been. You know, whether it was 1909 or 2009, Matt, media have always been controlled in large part by some form of big business interest, some sort of corporate entity. The progressive's created an outlet and a voice for people who would otherwise have been forced to remain silent. Are there any pieces or issues that stand above others? That make you especially proud of the mission of the Progressive?
Oh, I think so. Well, just on this media question, I mean, Robert LaFollette in November 1920 says, "The power that controls the press controls the American market. It's doubtful if the American people can ever emancipate themselves from the merciless exploitation of the colossal monopoly which controls markets and prices until they shall establish a free and independent press." Do you want to be free, he asked. Do you want to be economically and politically free? Then begin at once, he said. Organize in every state for a free and independent press. So there was LaFollette talking about the corporate press and the problems of the corporate press and the need to get beyond it. But probably the best thing we ever printed was an article by James Baldwin in December 1962, the great African-American essayist and novelist. This was called A Letter to My Nephew. It was written to his nephew, also named James Baldwin. And if I've got a second, I'll just read about three sentences of it.
Oh, please.
It's so powerful. So, James Baldwin, "This innocent country set you down in a ghetto in which, in fact, it intended that you should perish. You were born into a society which spelled out with brutal clarity, and in as many ways as possible, that you were a worthless human being. You were not expected to aspire to excellence. You were expected to make peace with mediocrity. Wherever you've turned, James, in your short time on this earth, you've been told where you could go and what you could do and how you could do it, where you could live and whom you could marry. Please try to remember that what they believe, as well as what they do and cause you to endure, doesn't testify to your inferiority, but to their inhumanity and fear. That's pretty powerful writing.
Wow. Yeah, and that is. And this is this particular essay contained in Democracy in Print?
It is, and it's we didn't even touch it. A lot of the essays we cut down to readable size. This came in at readable size, and it's been an essay that's been anthologized in a lot of different places. It's really a landmark piece of writing in the civil rights movement.
How long did it take, just out of curiosity? This is a full-size book, of course. How long did it take to compile all this? How many editors, how many proofreaders worked on pulling together?
Yeah, we've got four editors here, and we all took several decades each, and I actually went through every single issue myself just to make sure that we weren't missing some gems that might spill out of the bound volumes if we opened them one final time. So it took really the better part of 2 years to put this whole book together. I can't tell you we read every word, but we did turn every page of 100 volumes of The Progressive. And while it was tedious in some ways, it was like a treasure hunt in others. And like one of the gems that came out was this thing by Carl Sandburg. Carl Sandburg, the great Chicago poet, had written a little piece about having a baby girl. He and his wife had a daughter, and within a day of having the daughter, all of Carl Sandburg's friends came up to him and said, you know, too bad it's a girl. And Carl Sandburg wrote this essay called My Baby Girl to answer those critics and to say, no, being a girl is a wonderful thing, and my baby girl will live to see the day not only when women have the right to vote, but when women are in Congress. And lo and behold, he was prophetic about that.
And of course, the progressive has been such a pivotal part of all of that. What issue, whether it was suffrage, and as you said, it was born in the suffrage movement, resistance to the First World War, the civil rights struggle. What is the future of the progressive? Is there a defining issue for it right now?
Well, I think this bank issue is a crucial one. The Afghan war is a crucial one. Corporate power and this question of the United States being an empire, those are real basic issues. And also, you know, some basic levels of decency and equality in this country so that we don't have 47 million people without health care. We don't have 35 million people who go without necessary food during part of the year. I mean, that's an astonishing fact, and it should be a shameful fact too for us. So, you know, social justice against empire, fighting against corporate power, really talking about an economic democracy as well as a political democracy. Those are three of the biggest issues, I think.
And where so many people bring so many ideas to the magazine from so many disparate areas. Are there areas, pockets of activism that you think are shining above others or are producing the issues of the day?
Well, right now, I mean, I got to take my hat off to the marriage equality movement, to the gay rights movement. I mean, this has been a nonviolent revolution in this country in attitudes. I mean, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, we're getting on the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion here. Gay rights was on no one's radar. And here we have laws in several states saying that gays can marry, men can marry men, women can marry women, and that's a great thing. This is part of the whole drive toward equality and liberty in this country, but it was something that just wasn't there 40 years ago. Similarly, the women's movement has been a nonviolent revolution over the last 50 years, and so these are some of the successes, I think.
Just out of curiosity, do you have any idea the first time that marriage equity appeared in the pages of the Progressive via its advocacy?
I think probably Kate Clinton was writing about marriage equality. First, you know, she's against marriage from a radical standpoint and called it mad vow disease, but she's come around to it now. She's one of our humorists. But in 1973, we published kind of a path-breaking article by a guy named Richard Gallant that was called I'm Proud to Be a Sissy. this was him coming out of the closet and saying how important it was for people who were gay to come out of the closet and accept themselves for who they were. So, you know, we weren't that late to the dance.
Well, that's I was figuring there was probably something, you know, the 1970s. That just blows my mind, Matt. Where's the best place for folks to get their hands on the book, Democracy in Print?
Yeah, I think the best place to go is you can go to a bookstore. It should be in bookstores, but you can also just go to our website at progressive.org. That's not progressive.com, which will get you auto insurance. progressive.org. You can get Democracy in Print, and you can also get our anniversary issue in April that reduces every year of the Progressive to one page. And so you can just march through 100 years in 100 pages, and that's a lot of fun with some of the original illustrations, too. So either of those things can be acquired at progressive.org.
And you know, I've got the magazine here in front of me. I don't have the book in my hands yet, but
we cut it differently. The magazine is done chronologically, and the book is done thematically by, you know, corporate power, civil rights, civil liberties, women's equality, etc. And so I think that, you know, there are at least two ways to slay the cat, and we've been on the operating table here for a couple of years.
Well, I'm looking here. I just flipped it open. March 1986, a snippet from the late, great Molly Ivins, How to Survive Reagan. Do you have any idea that when people come to the Progressive as writers, are they usually already established, or does the Progressive help boost people into the consciousness?
You know, we've always had an open door for freelance writers who may never have published anything. We have something coming out in our next issue from a freelance writer we've never dealt with before and is just getting her start. But we also have stars like Molly Ivins. My favorite Molly Ivins line in this issue that you were reading is from 1998 during the Monica Lewinsky scandal. She said, "With all due respect to the president's private parts, we do have bigger problems in this country." That was the great Molly Ivins.
I miss her so badly, Matt, I tell you.
Yeah, me too.
Just to have her around to watch the furor surrounding the constant stream of tempests and teapots created by the Republican Party over our first the dark-skinned president would be a beautiful thing. There are two people out there. One of them's Hunter Thompson. The other one's Molly Ivins. I look up and go, you know, what would they be saying right now? They'd be having conniptions.
Yeah, and maybe together. She told me of a story when they were driving through the Everglades together, arms around each other. I hope there wasn't a cop on the road, because I'm sure that car was swerving.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit. Matt, the other thing that I was struck in looking at this anniversary issue, and has always struck me about the Progressive, is the wonderful artwork inside. How does that come about?
Well, we have allowed our art directors over the years to have almost total freedom. And so, you know, they find the best and most innovative, most avant-garde artists to produce work for under scale, for sure, in the pages of the Progressive. So that's what's happened in the last 25 years. And prior to that, we had some of the best cartoonists in the country who were writing for us. And one of the fun things about leafing through this issue is to see the original artwork. It's not only a walk through U.S. history and Progressive history, it's a walk through the history of illustration in magazines and newspapers. So for people who are into that kind of thing, I'd certainly suggest getting a copy of this issue. I mean, Herb Bloch is in here. You know, some of the most famous people in the 50s and 60s and 70s are well represented. But the stuff from early on I like too.
It's all absolutely stunning, and especially so when you consider that at any given point in time in the history of this magazine, it has never shirked from attacking sacred cows or pointing out the utter nudity of the emperor, so to speak. You've got you mentioned James Baldwin, you mentioned Carl Sandburg. The other thing that I've noticed about the Progressive is that you have a very interesting nexus between art and opinion and creativity and reportage. How much of a conscious effort is that?
Well, it's very conscious. In the last 25 years, we've decided to publish one original piece of political poetry a month. We believe in the power and the art of poetry. We also publish a Q&A, an interview with someone who most of the readers would recognize, a writer or artist or performer, you know, Susan Sarandon, Allen Ginsberg I interviewed once in his apartment in New York. That was a hoot. But anyway, we give people a way to kind of walk into the pages of the Progressive, and, you know, you can hear from an interview or you can get from a poem sometimes things that you can't get from reading 100 editorials. I mean, sometimes you just don't want to hear someone pontificate. You want to see the beauty of the poetry, or you want to hear how someone you respect, like Sarandon or Allen Ginsberg, deals with the crushing issues of the day. And that can be more uplifting than just about anything. So this was a very conscious effort on our part.
And so some of those people are in the book.
Sarandon and Ginsberg are in there.
Yeah, and Michael Feldman, I believe, Molly Ivins, whom we've mentioned. Will Durst, one of the current leading lights of skewering via humor, the right wing elite is in there. Poets like Adrian Rich, among other things. Do they come to you, or do you go and find them?
Well, the poets actually come to us now, which is nice. I mean, Adrian Rich and Martina Spada, another great contemporary poet, I went to at the beginning saying, look, you know, I'm kind of a novice in this poetry thing. You guys are some of the stars. Can you help me invite some people to contribute to the Progressive? So they gave me a list of poets, and the poets have been responding, and Adrian Rich has been responding ever since as well. So we've had several of her poems in the Progressive. Rita Dove, Pulitzer Prize winner in poetry, has published with us, as have others. So, yeah, we assign, but we also get stuff that just floats in beautifully from the mail.
And you've been at the Progressive how long, and how long have you been the editor?
Well, I got here in diapers. I may leave in diapers. You know, I got here when I was 24. I've been here 26, 27 years now. I've been editing it since, for the last 15 years. I was an associate editor when I got here, and then I played some different positions here. But when my great predecessor, Irwin Knoll, just up and died on me one morning, I had to take over right away, and he was a legend and a very courageous man.
How did you find yourself, find your way to the Progressive? Were you naturally predisposed toward it?
Yeah, I grew up in a liberal democratic family, and, you know, I became a little more progressive or radical in college, and then I went work for Ralph Nader for 2.5 years, and then I came out here to the Midwest to be closer to my folks and to come here for a vacation. It's been a long vacation. Actually, it hasn't been a vacation for the last 23 years, but the first few years was a vacation. I barely could work 35 hours a week, you know.
And let me ask before I forget. We have the 100th anniversary issue of the magazine. We have the new book out, Democracy in Print, The Best of the Progressive Magazine, 1909 to 2009. But you also recently had a celebration out in Madison, didn't you?
Oh, we had a great party here on May 1st and May 2nd with all sorts of leaders of the Progressive movement. Howard Zinn was here, Naomi Klein was here, Dennis Kucinich and Marcy Kaptur and Tammy Baldwin from Congress were here, Joan Claybrook of Public Citizen was here, Robert Redford was here, that was the shocker of the day. Barbara Ehrenreich and Katha Pollitt were here also. Just a tremendous gathering of people. Terry Tempest Williams, the great environmental essayist. And for 2 days, we just had one great speaker or panel after another, and it was just a real thrilling and humbling thing that everyone would come out here, not only to celebrate the Progressive magazine, but to affirm their faith in the Progressive movement.
Absolutely. And the other thing one will notice going through the magazine is the fact that one is not beaten over the head with that curse of the magazine industry, you know, the pull-out cards and so forth. How does the Progressive stay financially alive?
I don't know. Maybe we should put more cards in there. The Progressive has always stayed alive for only one reason, and that is the readers of the Progressive have bailed us out time and time again. Back in the early days with Fighting Bob La Follette, he would beg people for donations over and above the price of the subscription, and many of the last 25 years I've spent more than 100 evenings a year on the phone begging people for contributions, too. We don't have an owner. We're nonprofit. We don't have a lot of advertisers, as you can see. We don't have people who give us $100,000 a year. We just scramble around and ask our, you know, 55,000 subscribers if they can pony up a little more than the price of the subscription just to keep this independent magazine going. That's what makes us independent.
And it's interesting that in an era when so-called dead tree journalism is on the ropes, you guys seem to be full steam ahead. How have you handled the rise of internet-based information versus versus the physical hard copy production?
Well, the internet has freed me up, really, because before the internet, I had a gag in my mouth 29 out of the 30 days of the month, because they were a monthly. I could only speak one day of the month, and that was frustrating for me. I mean, I need to get stuff off my chest or I'm going to explode, and so that's why I like the internet. We post stuff on the internet almost every day, but this isn't stuff that gets into the magazine. We don't put that much of the magazine up on the web for free. Instead, we have almost totally different entities. We have quick commentaries up on the website that we do ourselves. We have Will Durst doing a joke a day on the web. But then in the magazine, we give people kind of a look from a higher angle. And that's why I think the Progressive is going to survive while newspapers are going to die. We're seeing their corpses on the sidewalk every day. But newspapers, you know, it used to be you could wrap a fish in yesterday's newspaper. Now you can wrap a fish in today's newspaper because the news in the newspaper is old by the time it hits your front stoop. And they haven't figured out that problem, nor have they figured out their economic crisis, which is now they're not getting the advertising they were before. Whereas we depend on our subscribers for survival. And secondly, we give people something that isn't going to perish overnight. It's more like a book than it is a newspaper, and people enjoy the aesthetic experience of reading a book, and I think of reading the Progressive magazine, too. We have an opening, a welcoming from me, and then we have a small little tidbits at the beginning, then a main meal, and then we have some beauty with the poetry, some fun with Will Durst or Kate Clinton or Michael Feldman, and then we close out with Jim Hightower. And so you get a kind of a holistic experience reading the Progressive magazine, and people will be enjoying that, I think, for decades to come, as opposed to just grabbing one bite after another on the conveyor belt of news, which is the internet, and that's kind of a crazy way to consume.
It is indeed. Doing what I do here, I have this steady stream of information into my eyeballs, and one of the nice things is being able to sit back and just read something that is digestible, that begs for more consideration than simply the absorption of facts, and you do that so very, very well. So is this the model that will persist, you hope, into the next 100 years? Where does the Progressive go next?
Well, I think we're going to continue doing what we're doing well. I think we may go into longer form as opposed to shorter form. I know a lot of the smart people, the brainiacs, are trying to make things shorter and shorter in, like, Newsweek, which is a joke of a name for a magazine in the day and age of the internet anyway, but they're going to shorter and shorter. We're going to go longer and longer. Because on the internet, I really don't want to read something that's 3,000 words. But in a magazine or in a book, I would. And so we're going to be doing that, more reflective pieces, more investigative pieces, in addition to the great columnists we have and the fun interviews we have. So I think that's what's going to make the difference. That's why people are going to stay with us.
Well, it certainly sounds like there's plenty to look forward to in the next 100 years. Matt, I really appreciate you coming on. And let me just say again, we enjoy so very much your daily commentaries. Let me get a pitch out there for you, if you don't mind, for your weekly attempt. Tell folks a little bit about that.
Yeah, I do this weekly radio show. I love radio. I love live radio. I love talking to intelligent people who can dance on their feet. And just yesterday, for instance, I interviewed this 89-year-old woman, Gerda Lerner. She is one of the founders of the profession of women's history, really a pioneer, and she's still at it. I mean, she was organizing child care centers when she was a young person, and now she's organizing the old people's home she's living in. Just an incredible person. And so people can find out more information about that at progressive.org. I haven't posted that interview yet. It will be posted within the next few weeks. But it's just the opportunity to talk to people like that that's so exciting for me.
Could I ask, since we are reaching toward the end of this wonderful conversation, could I ask a favor?
Sure.
I'm a professional talker there, you can tell. Our headquarters, what we do with the horn, Matt, is very similar to what you have described with the way you survive with the Progressive. We don't, if you listen to right-wing talk radio, you're constantly besieged by patent medicine hucksterism and shills for vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls and Swedish mattresses and the buy gold now and incorporate in Nevada and all of that garbage that only a sucker would fall for, frankly. We don't do any of that, but we are sponsored beyond our listeners' contributions that keep us on the air. We're also sponsored by a local grassroots organization here in West Virginia called Coal River Mountain Watch. And they are intimately involved in the fight against mountaintop removal, which I'm sure you are familiar with here. I guess the favor that I would ask would be to see if somewhere down the road we might expect to see a little bit, some more exposure of that issue, because the horrible thing about coal, Matt, is the fact that you don't have to come home with a sooty face to be involved with that industry. People can be a part of blowing up the mountains that are literally a couple of miles from my home simply by turning on a light switch and not turning it off when they walk out of the room. So I guess I would ask somewhere down the road that sort of fly up on your radar, with a little bit of brightness. Another West Virginian, Maria Ganeau, a personal friend of mine, recently won what's referred to as the Environmental Nobel. She's our second winner of the Goldman Prize in the last 5-6 years. I would personally just love to see more of that in the magazine, and I hope I'm not being forward in putting that idea.
No, not at all. This is a crucial issue, this mountaintop removal issue. And my hat is off to all the people who've been organizing there in West Virginia and around those parts to prevent this just desecration of these mountains, and it's just the crudest kind of corporate mineral grab that we've ever seen here.
Well, I appreciate that, and I tell you what, quite possibly I'll see if I can't get some of my friends to send along a little photography or maybe a little commentary to you, just to maybe put a little bit more of a light on it. Matt Rothschild, the book, of course, Democracy in Print, the best of the Progressive Magazine, 1909 to 2009. You can get it, as you noted, Matt, at various booksellers. Best way to go about it is just to go to progressive.org and order it. Thank you so much, and I hope we can have another conversation sometime very, very soon.
Yeah, I'd love that. You know how to find me.
I absolutely do. Thanks, Matt.
All right, Bob. Thanks.
Bye now. Bye. Matt Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine, progressive.org. Again, Democracy in Print. You know, the neat thing about the Progressive magazine, you ever go to the doctor? You ever go to the doctor and there's that stack of 19-year-old magazines? You pick it up and, Will Mary Pickford marry? Jesus, it's 100. And there's nothing in there. Then you've just got to pass the time while you're waiting to get something poked, prodded, or stuck somewhere you don't want stuck. And I figured out that doctor's offices are where bad old magazines go to die. The beautiful thing about the Progressive is that it is not like that. The Progressive is one of those things that you will keep on. You won't let go of the copies, because it remains relevant year in and year out. A brief review of the book and the excerpting that I've seen, and many thanks to Matt's publicist for bringing this to my attention. One of the things that you will find is that you are inspired, because suddenly you realize that you're part of an activist. And as a concerned citizen of this once and hopefully future great nation, you realize that there's a continuity of activism, that it is activism, a thread that runs through history itself. That Jane Addams has been there, fighting Bob LaFollette has been there. So many people. This list is just stunning. Jane Addams, Carl Sandburg, Huey Long, John Kenneth Galbraith, Theodore Dreiser, Barbara Ehrenreich, Noam Chomsky, Upton Sinclair, Arundhati Roy, James Baldwin, Edwidge Dodicott, Edward Said, on and on and on. The people who have sought the most positive change in this country have sooner or later found their way into the pages of the Progressive. And as you pick up an old copy, you're not sitting there looking at it saying, well, I guess I can put this in the recycle pile. You can't bear to let go of it. because it's going to retain relevance. Now, I'm not kidding. What I saw online there, the reporting and the writing about the bailouts and the Republican response to economic stimulus under the FDR, the first FDR administration, read, like I said, like it was published 5 weeks ago, not seven decades. And that's the beauty of progressive liberal thought. It, by virtue of being liberal, is transcendent. And by virtue of participating in that thought, well, you yourself become a part of something far greater. Because looking at the pages of this magazine, it sparks ideas. And you never know where that idea, you never know what idea you will see that sparks one in you, that transforms you for a moment or for a day or for a week or for a year or for a lifetime. It transforms you by making you understand that you really, we really are the difference. The conservatives with their eyes in the backs of their heads, forever looking backwards and terrified to take a step forward, they are not the ones who build a better America. They are the ones who keep America from being better. It is only those of us who step forward into the light, hearts charged with hope, and daring to dream and willing to work to make those dreams concrete. We are the ones who are the stewards, if you will. Of the future and of what can be as opposed to what is. And what ought not be. So that's our first hour. Jump in. The conversation is fine. It's 2 minutes past 7 p.m. here on the East Coast. You know the phone number. 877-443-2366. 877. The numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel if you want to save us a little bit. 304-658-3333. This is, in fact, America's liberal voice. This is the horn.
Once we were lovers, but somehow things have changed. Now we're just lonely people trying to forget each other's names. Now we're just lonely people trying to forget each other's names. What came between us? Maybe we were just too young to know. But now and then I feel the same. And sometimes at night I think I hear you calling my name. These dreams, they keep me going these days. Once we were lovers, but that was long ago. We lived together then. And now we do not even say hello. We lived together then, and now we do not even say hello. What came between us? Maybe we were just too young to know. Now and then I feel the same. Sometimes at night I think I hear you calling my name. These dreams keep me going these days. What came between us? Maybe we were just too young to know. Now and then I feel the same. And sometimes at night I think I hear you calling my name. These dreams keep me going these days.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's Tuesday, May 12th, 2009.
Obama abandons polar bears. The highest ski run in the world melted. Plus,
when we go down deep through the dark today, we come up with a light for America.
All of that and more straight ahead on the most scintillating 6 minutes in Green News Radio. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Right, here she is, still retaining her crown as Miss Green News Report, Desi Doyen, with today's headlines.
The Obama administration has let stand a last-minute Bush administration midnight regulation regarding polar bears. The Bush administration had declared polar bears officially endangered 6 months ago because its habitat is melting from rising global temperatures. But in its final weeks, Bush approved a special rule that forbids federal agencies from using the Endangered Species Act to restrict emissions of greenhouse gases or considering any other impact that could occur outside the bear's habitat in the Arctic Circle.
Now, this really kind of enrages me. Obama has let this one go, has not challenged it?
He has not challenged it. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said, yes, the Obama administration recognizes the need to protect the polar bears. But he said, quote, the Endangered Species Act is not the proper mechanism for controlling the nation's emissions.
They recognize it, but they ain't doing it. So what they're saying here is that you can't consider issues outside
of the polar bears' habitats.
Right. That's part of the Endangered Species Act. Now, industry representatives and Republicans in Congress had argued that without that special rule, any proposed project subject to government approval anywhere in the nation could face review of how its emissions might harm polar bears. Things like housing developments in Virginia or power plants in New Mexico could be considered and turned down because the Endangered Species Act would say it would harm polar bears.
And so why shouldn't they be turned down if they would harm polar bears?
Well, now a lot of people say...
Is that just too broad?
They say the Endangered Species Act is simply not the right venue, the right mechanism to control our emissions. They want Congress to create an actual legislative framework instead of a patchwork across states. And also, you know, now this is one interesting thing. One environmental group, most of them, of course, criticized this, but one, the National Wildlife Federation, said that it was really actually too much of a burden for the Fish and Wildlife Service to police emissions. And it would fall, the burden would fall on all of these projects to be considered for approval. With the burden would fall on the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Sounds like folks making excuses to me. So Congress should make a law. Perhaps they could make a law saying we can consider things outside of the polar bear's habitat.
Congress is considering climate change legislation and energy legislation, so it would fall under that, ideally.
All right, I'm considering being ticked off.
A Bolivian glacier estimated to be 18,000 years old took only 40 years to melt. An international team of scientists say the Chacaltaya Glacier in the Andes Mountains in Bolivia is now completely gone, 10 years faster than previously predicted. At over 17,000 feet, it is a primary source of drinking water for the region and had been billed as the world's highest ski run.
And it's gone.
It's gone. Well, there's about 600 feet left, but that's not much of a ski run.
So the ski run is gone. More importantly, the water supply is gone?
Well, it's not completely gone, but it is melting, and they're saying snowfall and precipitation have changed in
the
area.
And will it come back? Do these glaciers ever return once they've disappeared?
Well, we're entering a global period of climate that we've never had before, so we don't know. Every year, the nation's coal-fired power plants generate over 100 million tons of toxic waste, and that waste gets stored in unlined, unregulated, unmonitored sludge ponds. Remember that one in Tennessee that burst its walls in December last year and destroyed hundreds of acres of land?
I do, and the sludge ponds are legal in and of themselves,
yes,
right?
They are.
But they leak.
Yes, that's where the problem is,
okay.
Yeah. The Bush administration kept secret for 5 years a study that showed residents who live near these coal waste dumps are at increased risk of cancer from drinking water polluted by these coal ash impoundments.
Oh, man. So it leaks into the drinking water?
Yes, it leaches into the drinking water over time because these ponds are unlined or improperly constructed so that they leak.
And folks who live by are at an increased risk, but Bush kept this secret?
According to the Charleston Gazette, the study was undertaken by the Bush EPA in 2002, but the results were largely kept secret. The Obama administration released the study late last week.
All right, score one for Obama on the sludge ponds, take one away on the polar bears.
And just in time, the proponents of coal are launching a nationwide advertising campaign to promote their product. The American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity is a front group for coal companies, and they've introduced their new online factuality tour of 5 coal-producing states. Not to be left behind, the West Virginia Coal Association is getting in on the action with some awesome new ringtones of their own, singing the praises of coal.
West Virginia coal, gonna take you on a ride.
Yeah, they're gonna take you on a ride, all right.
To the shore and countryside, gonna let you work your magic and your power.
I'm supposed to have this on my cell phone?
West Virginia coal, you're on your way.
Yeah, you're on your way.
We go down deep through the dark today. We come.
How long is this gonna ring on my phone?
America, America.
Okay, all right, we got the idea. That's on my cell phone. These guys also did one last Christmas, I believe, to celebrate some crap. Here we go.
He's a jolly, happy soul. He's abundant here in America. He helps our economy roll.
Okay, no, he's not. So that's what you get from the clean coal industry, the so-called clean coal industry. They will say anything, they will do anything to trick you into buying into their garbage. Much more on that at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Clean Green News Report.
Call in West Virginia.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hey, you know what? I remember when I was a kid,
And I can't remember if it was Don't Get in the Car with Strangers campaign, or maybe it was Don't Drink the Poison Under the Sink, Kitty. But there was a little cartoon icon character. We didn't call them icons back then, by the way. But it was part of a campaign to help kids not be poisoned or picked up by strangers, or picked up by strangers and poisoned. I can't remember which. But it was the name of the creature was Patch the Pony. And Patch the Pony said, "Nay, nay, stay away." Well, shortly before the program began, the fine folks at Microsoft sent me a program update of the all-new, highfalutin, and utterly wonderful Internet Explorer 8. Since I've had a hell of a lot of problems with Internet Explorer 7, I took the update. Now, why I would do that, what sort of sad and benighted mental process going on inside my skull that would make me think that Internet Explorer 8 would be less of a problem than Internet Explorer 7... I don't know. There's probably years of therapy involved with sorting that out. But anyway, I took the update. And as Patch the Pony said many years ago in regard to taking poison from strangers, nay, nay, stay away. You don't want Internet Explorer 8. I'm sure I don't see, I'm not on that tab right now. But I'm sure that there is a string of notices to me in the chat room saying, "Bob, quit using Internet Explorer." I know. But every time I have to learn a new Internet, I really am. I don't know, something, you know, when you hit your 40s, the geezer gene kicks in. I'm losing the ability to deal with technology anymore. And I got Firefox on the machine, and you know what? Tried it for a few days. It annoyed me. I don't know if it annoyed me more than Internet Explorer 7, because Internet Explorer 7 has been annoying me for so very long, and Internet Explorer 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. But it was... Come on, guys. This ain't rocket science. Just make a browser that freaking works, okay? That doesn't lock my computer up, that doesn't lose every story that I had laid out for the program this evening. Just don't do that. But apparently that is beyond the capability of people who design web browsers. My apologies to the Internet Explorer and or Firefox fans out there. I am neither. I just want the little thing, little USB, Firewire port in my wrist where I just plug in and know things. I give up. I just give up. Because one of the frustrating things was that I had a couple of stories that I wanted to get to for sure. Because Matt Rothschild, in our conversation last half hour, referenced the dying newspaper industry. Oh, there it is. Now, if Bill Gates will just let me see it. There's something, and light the phone lines up if you want to. There's a couple of lines lit already. One of them's probably a telemarketer, for all I know. We get a lot of those. I have so much fun with telemarketers these days. Not being mean, but frauds like this business of we can help you lower your home loan, where you know, you got to work them for a while. Well, are you from the federal government? Well, you got some of that bailout stimulus money for me? I mean, it's fun. I've even taped a couple, but I didn't hang on to them because in the end I thought, you know, nobody wants to listen to this. But it's at least a little bit engaging and passes the time for me. That we will get to the why the newspaper industry is dying story momentarily, but in the sincere hope that this is not a telemarketer, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, I voted.
Hot diggity. Thank you, David.
Yeah, and I just want to say, wow, I think Spike has showed the power of momentum with just that call.
He absolutely did. He showed the power of what grassroots determination can accomplish.
He also just showed the power. It just happens when you ask. So people just listening, go to the site, go to headonradionetwork.com and sign up and support for those that haven't. It's never too late. It is never too late. Until you're dead, then it's too late.
Right, as far as we know.
Yeah, as far as we know. Right?
Yeah, we've, I think from the beginning of the show till now, we've picked up another six supporters. We're at 308 now.
That's encouraging to hear and inspiring, to say the least. I think everybody listening who hasn't done it, and you, let me just say something. I don't sign up to sites, and I signed up to this site, so
yeah,
it tells you something about of the.
Yeah, and the nice thing is, Democracy for America does run a pretty nice site, David. And they're not going to hit you with spams or letters from Nigerian cancer patients needing help from you, you know, helping them dispose of their $16 million or anything.
Yeah, and, you know, you were touching on of the funding. And I started thinking about how the fact that we need to think out the box of sort of the same way that Spike did. He just asked. And, if you're going to have this kind of setup, it's we're going to have to look far and wide across the internet, and with all of our combined efforts, I'm sure we can find some prosperous seed investors with an operation that you have right now.
Yeah, and well, you know, it was eye opening to me listening to Matt Rothschild about how the progressive has managed to stay alive. You know, they don't run a bunch of ads. There are no shiny white teeth ads in the progressive. There are no ads for, you know, and how easy would it be to just go and, you know, because there was a lot of print ads bought in the heyday of Detroit. Mm-hmm. They ain't in there. And they rely instead on their subscribers to keep them alive. And they do. The model does work. The model can work. The key, of course, is constantly expanding the base of people who are willing to make a sacrifice of one to one degree or another to make sure that it keeps on happening. And I'm inspired by the progressive, because, you know, 100 years, David, it's been working like this.
I'm shocked at that too. Everybody needs to inspire everybody. That's why everybody is important. When someone is lost, or when someone doesn't contribute, We just have to pick up that much more weight, but it can still be done. But one of the things that I wanted to say was, it got me thinking about, I'm thinking of putting up together a list of potential angel investors and giving their kind of profile. And if some people want to help out, I'm also thinking of putting together some letters to reach out now that you need this money in an emergency sense. And I think we can get some responses if we play the ratio game. I don't know how many it'll take, but that's not really important. There's someone in that pile of names. That's all I'm going to say on that.
Okay.
And I think a lot of one of the places I'm going to mine the list from is the top 50 Fortune 500 philanthropists on the list, and just look at their profile and see which ones are easily accessible and which ones aren't, and just kind of weed it out that way. And if people want to help out, I'll have all their vital information, so you can contact them or write them or look at their site or whatever, so we can get a handle on this. Because what I'm seeing right now is you're going to need a steady flow of money that we can't supply at that level. So.
No.
I guess that's the direction we need to go into.
It is. And the fact of the matter is, you know, we talk about what it takes to keep the horn on the air, David.
Mm-hmm.
There are two entities. And in fact, I was having a conversation with Ben Birch earlier today. Ben runs White Rose Society separate from how we run the horn.
Right.
And we're trying to talk about, you know, what we need to do to make sure that his needs are met as well as the needs of the horn. And their equipment needs. There are monthly bills to be paid for server time and server space. And you know how we make sure that all of that works together, because at this point in time, when every separate hand that is out there asking for contributions makes it more difficult across the board for everyone else. So perhaps at some point we reach some way to consolidate it all so that everything is taken care of by one contribution. I haven't figured out how that happens yet, nor has Ben. But we are certainly talking about it because, you know, it takes $2,000 plus per month to keep this going here, just on our end. Guy James raises funds separately just to keep himself going. And then Ben Birch has massive expenses associated with keeping his servers going and doing what he does so brilliantly. And so we've got to come up with one figure and one way to reach more people so that this can keep going.
Well, you know, it's like I said, that the people are out there. It's just finding access to them and letting them know more and more about it. And I think when you put yourself out there, if you are invited to, and I hope they do play you fairly on this one. If you're number one all three rounds, then to me it's a no-brainer. You should definitely go. I mean, I don't even think there doesn't even need to be anything said. It should be like an unwritten law. The person who's number one goes. I mean, come on. I know you're not going to say anything because you want to be a nonpartisan on this.
Yeah, diplomatic was another word I was looking for. Yes.
Okay, diplomatic, exactly. And you know, I just think it's important for people to realize the fact that. You never know what it is going to be, what your contribution is going to be until you try. So don't get insecure, people, and lack that kind of confidence. I don't know what you're capable of, and neither do you until you try.
Now there is the truism of the night, without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes back to common sense, and as you can see, common sense is sold in all of the useful Amazon helpful self-esteem books all across the world, and I think it comes back to the fact that we need to keep reminding people. I don't know why that is. I think, you know, one of the things that is this. This disinformation, this lowering people, treating them lower than what they're worth, calling people average. I think this doesn't help because then people start to think, oh, but I'm just an average person. I can't. You know, everyone's extraordinary. Look at your DNA. Everyone's DNA is completely different from each other. That, by the very definition, you are extraordinary. There you go.
Well, that's why that from time to time I'll catch myself saying ordinary working people, and I'll usually correct myself along the way and say extraordinary working people, because just surviving anywhere on this planet, just being a human being who managed to survive, makes you extraordinary. This is it's living on the planet ain't a no-brainer. It is harder in some places than others. Witness the story of that cardboard box oven that could save thousands of acres of trees used for nothing more than fuel to cook food. You know, something as simple as food and cooking fuel and water, you know, the staples of life, the very sine qua non of existence, is not a given in many places on this planet. And that's what, and I know it offends the right wing. Well, you know, you're saying blame America first. No, I'm saying that we are so oblivious to what we do to the rest of the world to maintain our standard of living here that there is an inherent bias in it. There's an inherent racism. There is an inherent culturalism in it. And if we just look at it a little bit and examine it and examine our consciences, David.
Yeah.
We can't help but change our usage patterns and our consumption patterns. You know, what human being in this country, well, first of all, you can't use need and television in the same sentence.
What human being in this country has the use of more than one television in a home? At best, two.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I really do hope that TV kind of just fades more and more into the background as internet just basically rips cable from. I've been on so many on different. A lot of people just program a channel on these chat rooms. Like one channel I was on last night, or I've been watching while I've been doing my eBay listings, that I put in the background is the Twilight Zone channel, and they just, this is amazing. They sequenced all the episodes, so it goes from season to season in sequence. And you know, to me, I look at technology like that, and I go, I really hope TV can't keep up with what the internet's doing, and I hope nobody tries to stop the internet's progress. That's one of my biggest concerns, is the fact of who's going to attempt to shut the internet down, this Internet 2 thing that they're talking about. I don't know. It's steeped in some heavy paranoia, partly, but also there is a little bit of truth in it. I'm just trying to figure out what.
Oh, ever since the internet dawned, David, I've been waiting for somebody to shut it down.
Oh, exactly.
You know, because this is just way too much free speech.
I know. And you know, that's something that I'm wondering if, you know, we keep going back to what the Pentagon said about planning their own cyber psyops, and I wonder what they have cooking in to keep them relevant. And you know, this goes to what I wanted to call about. There's a story headline: the Federal Reserve can't account for $9 trillion in off-balance sheet transactions. When Representative Alan Grayson asked Inspector General Elizabeth Coleman of the Federal Reserve some very basic questions about where the trillions of dollars that have come from the Fed's expanded balance sheet, the IG didn't know. Worse, nobody at the Fed seems to have any idea what the losses on its $2 trillion portfolio really are. I'm shocked to find out that nobody at the Federal Reserve is keeping track of anything, Grayson says. That's the Twilight Zone episode for me right there. The fact that we let that continue in this country.
Yeah.
I don't understand how. See, here's the big question. How can they even say we can be accountable, scold us for being accountable, when at the very top tier, no one's accountable? You don't even know your portfolio?
yeah, but that's kind of a fraud, don't you think?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, is there anybody out there who thinks that George Bush didn't know what was in his blind trust, for instance?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot of Carlyle Group stock. No, I know. That's a blind trust. I don't know about that. Daddy Daddy was drunk one night and started talking about that. It's a rumor.
And the other story I wanted to talk about, I hope to summon Preston. I have my sorcery book. So let's see if we can summon Preston. It deals with, I'm just going to read very briefly, all she wants is the rainwater that lands on her roof. She lives with her husband and two children in a solar-powered home in rural San Miguel County committed to promoting sustainability. Chris grows organic produce year-round, most of which is sold to local restaurants and farmer markets. So Chris did what thousands of farmers before her have done. She applied for a water right, except instead of seeking to divert water from a stream, she sought to collect rain that fell upon the roof of her house and greenhouse. To her surprise, the state engineer opposed her application, arguing that other water users already had locked up the right to use the rain. The Colorado Water Court agreed, and Chris was denied the right to store a few barrels of rainwater. If she persisted with rain harvesting, she would be subject to fines of up to $500 per day. How the hell can you own the rainwater?
You know, that's that whole European mindset kicking in, and it's a European Near Eastern mindset where, you know, you can slit somebody's throat for getting a sip of water out of your well in the desert. It's just the rain. Now, I mean, there's secondary questions about what's in that rainwater. You know, it's no longer a matter of General Jack D. Ripper saying,
Mandrake, go out and get, fix me a rainwater and grain alcohol and whatever it is you English people drink. You'll notice I never drink anything but grain alcohol and rainwater because I'm preserving my precious bodily fluids. Well, rainwater ain't clean, for starters.
Right.
It's chock-a-block with the mercury that condenses into the water vapor from the vile and filthy coal-fired power plants that belch the stuff out at massive rates every minute of every hour of every day in this nation and so many others. But the idea that, what, you know, no.
Here's the interesting thing about it. It goes into specifics. And by the way, if people want to check this story out, you can go to the forum and I posted it so you can check it out. But the interesting thing is it goes into is the fact that the laws regarding Colorado's constitution and the rivers and streams, it's the definition of a natural stream that comes into play. So that's what, so. For some reason, they consider rainwater as part of the natural stream.
I guess because it's part of the hydrologic cycle? I don't know. The irony of that is certainly not lost on me, David, when I consider that. And you know, there are you can get in trouble as a, let's say you're a landowner here in West Virginia.
Right.
And you've got a creek that's all choked up, that runs through your property, and because it's all choked up, it floods. And you decide to go in and take one of those little termite pieces of light heavy equipment. Wow, that's like jumbo shrimp, isn't it? Clean out the channel a little bit and make it run a little more freely. Let's say you do that. Well, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, the West Virginia Department of Natural Resources, will drop a rock on you.
Hmm.
For altering the nature of a flowing stream. Meanwhile, a couple of ridges over, there are entire streams being poisoned by a coal company, that's, you know, by virtue of what it does, it's dumping selenium and cadmium and barium and all the uniums, on the periodic table into the streams and killing everything that lives in it and making them run toxic. And the DNR and the DEP have absolutely nothing to say to them. You, individual, extraordinary citizen, your ass is grass.
Reminds me of that episode of The Twilight Zone. Mr. Woolsworth, you are obsolete. You are a critical thinking librarian. Obsolete.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah. I mean, I look at that. And I see what's happening with the prosecuting torture, and as I was rewatching that episode, I kept thinking, wow, if they don't do anything about this torture issue, they don't do anything about the issues of accountability when it comes to our banking systems, any of this, this is the road we're going down, the road of the obsolete man. I can see they want the crosshairs on the critical thinkers all across this country.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
And one last thing before I go. Have you checked out the Dick Durbin interview on Bill Moyers yet?
I haven't seen that yet, no.
I'll post the link. You got to watch it. It's important. He goes into detail what he said about the lobbyists owning the place. And it's a really, really good interview. People should check it out.
Cool. I will.
All right, Bob.
David, thank you very much.
To everyone, headonradionetwork.com. It's never too late to support. Keep voting. Let's give Bob to Netroots. Later.
Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye.
Pop culture correspondent David calling in from Maine. Part of the overwhelming effort that led to our candidacy for a Netroots Nation scholarship rocketing, I tell you, to number one last night in the nick of time and at the last minute. It's just, it's amazing. It's bang, we're up another voter just in the last few minutes. In the lead at 309. Second place had been in first place for a very long time and was only overtaken toward the end of the night last night. We're leading 309 to 212. I'm a little surprised because it was my understanding that all the votes were supposed to be zeroed out at the close of voting, but that has not happened yet. I don't know why. Haven't seen an email or anything like that. So, if you haven't voted, please do so. It is easy, and these are good folks at Democracy for America. This is part of the organization that was originally started by Dr. Howard Dean, and it is certainly, as he once noted, he said, I'm a Democrat from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, and if we're going to be involved in party politics, I think that's the side of the aisle we want to be involved in. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Has it occurred to anybody?
Hey, Susan.
That the only reason that this country has not had an armed revolution yet is the internet.
That we haven't had one, or that maybe we may be going toward one?
No, that we haven't had one. The internet is acting just like a safety valve does on a pressure cooker.
That's a valid observation.
Because it lets out all of that rage. No matter which end of the spectrum you're from, no matter what opinion you have, you can get it out on the internet. Instead of taking it out with a pitchfork.
Or a gun.
And,
you know, maybe that's the thing. They say that liberals, progressives, Democrats, decent human beings have done a far better job leveraging the power of the internet than the right wing have. Maybe that's why the right wing nuts are still grabbing their guns and shooting up churches and schools and so forth. Because they haven't found that safety valve, so their pressure cooker just continues to sit there and clack it, clack it, clack it, clack it on the stovetop till the beans wind up on the ceiling.
Right. But, you know, it just occurred to me that, you know, when David was talking about the very first thing people want to do is shut down the internet. Well, first of all, probably one of the reasons they want to shut it down is, the free speech issue, but also because too many people are having too much fun.
Well, and there is a boatload of fun to be had out there, and I'm not necessarily talking about porn.
Yeah, and these freepers just cannot tolerate all these people having too much, having old fun. But more than anything, they should start thinking about, hey, guys, this is a giant pacifier.
Just like TV was a giant pacifier, just like radio was a giant pacifier.
But being paranoid, all they can see is this is a giant way to organize.
Well, the other thing, of course, corporate America keeps looking at, you know what, there's some money hiding in here. All we got to do is find it, and we're going to be rich.
Yeah.
That's where the dot-com bubble came from in the 90s. There's got to be a way to make money at this. All we got to do is make it make money.
Speaking of making money, I was thinking, you know, we, as part of the stimulus package, my husband being on Social Security, we got some money courtesy of the federal government.
I like money.
Instructions.
Yeah.
What?
I like money. Sorry. Yeah, you haven't seen Idiocracy.
With instructions to go out and spend it, part of which were using to hire somebody else to clean up our yard since we can't do it, which I figured that's stimulus. But also I got to thinking, well, hey, why not show our support of Ford? Especially since the
price Ford Motor Company?
Yeah. They're the only one that's basically got a chance of hanging in there. And their stock is way low. Boy, did I get a rude surprise.
Yeah?
Their stock is just over $6 a share. That's possible even for me.
True.
But you can't buy it unless you buy 500 shares.
Oh.
Did these people learn nothing from Barack Obama?
Yeah, but they don't want our kind of people sitting in their stockholder meetings. We'll eat all the donuts.
Yeah, but the thing is, how many people like me and you are going to be able to go to their silly stockholder meeting?
There is that question.
None of them. But we will pony up our money.
And we will pony up our money. But the problem is, if we do that, then we might start getting all uppity and maybe aggregate our proxies and again, ruin their party.
Well, it's they got a choice to make. Now, you can either hope that these people will vote the way you want, or at least vote sensibly, or you can go down into the dustbin of history. Take your choice, Charlie.
True, true.
Because Ford may not be asking for bailout money, but they're wanting to raise $300 million worth of common stock.
But not at $6 at a pop.
Well, $6 a pop is what their stock is going as of last night.
Yeah, give it a couple of days. But, you know, because when it gets to 50 cents a share, those 500 shares might not be so tough.
Well, no, it's not 500 shares. It's $500.
Oh, $500. Okay.
Yeah.
I
misspoke.
Right. Yeah. So 6 into 50, 8 times is 48 to do 6 and 20.
Yeah, they want
maybe $84 worth. You know, that's just sad.
Yeah.
When within the lifetime of Henry Ford, did Ford stock go for $6 a share?
Never.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it was pennies on the share, you know, valuation of the dollar and all of that fun stuff.
Probably just about within about 30 days after he started Ford, the original Henry Ford. But I think at that time it was a privately held company, so I don't think it was, I don't think the stock was.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the stock history is of Ford Motor Company.
Yeah, I think it was a privately held company for years or upon years. But, you know, these people are not getting the idea. Barack Obama raised hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars from people who were paying $15, $20 a pop. Guys, wise up. Or go down.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument.
Yep. Oh, and by the way, I did vote. In fact, during your program, I voted yesterday.
Yeah, wasn't that just amazing?
It was good. Yeah, I was watching it last night, and I'm saying, wow. Because when I went to bed last night, you were, I think, fourth.
Yeah.
I get up today. Good grief, he's leading.
Yeah, everybody loves a horse race, too. So, Mike said some extremely kind words, and I will, and he was sincere, and I believe he was sincere in what he said, and I can't thank him and Kathy enough. Because I think, among other things, they recognize the power just stepping out of, now they're not doing it because they've still got terrestrial affiliates and stuff, and I certainly understand the reach of that. But they too understand that the future of radio, and especially liberal opinion and liberal conversation, is where we are. You see, the book
was the one night I missed.
The book has not been written, and the chapter has not even been begun, hardly. But I am firmly convinced, and this is not my monumental ego on running away with me, but I am firmly convinced that somewhere down the road, when this is all discussed, the horn will be seen as a pioneer. practically, you know, just living in the sod house in the middle of the wilderness kind of pioneer stuff. Eating the occasional handful of moss when the hard times came. But we will be seen as pioneers, and the people who have stood to make this happen will be seen as pioneers as well in their own right.
Well, of course. But it's worth doing. Because it's to me, it's where broadcasting, or at least liberal broadcasting, should be going. Trying to beat the fundies on their own turf, don't bother.
Well, yeah, because that turf is straight up and down vertical, and we're at the bottom end of it. They own the licenses, they own the radio stations, they own the corporations, they own the corporations that fund the corporations.
Yeah.
And we're...
Change the terrain.
Right. So why play in that? Go do it a new way. Go do it a better way. Go do it a more effective way.
Yeah. Invent a better mousetrap.
Or, as I like to think
if
of it, be the better mouse.
The smarter mouse.
There you go.
And then grow up and turn around and bite the hell out of them.
Well, yeah, because you realize that the right wing does view, because look at all the time that they spent, the likes of O'Reilly, you know, Mr. Falafel and so forth, all the time he spent slurring Air America.
Oh, yeah.
Swearing it would be gone, it would be dead, it would be over, and who knows if it'll survive. We've got a better chance of surviving, frankly, at the Horn. You know, I remember when I heard the number way back before they went bankrupt, that Air America was going through $80,000 a day, and I kicked furniture. Because there we were, older than Air America, and doing every bit as much on not even a third of that.
How do you...
In a year, a third of that in a year.
How do you grow through 80 large a day? I don't...
Well, you do really dumb things. You get people who don't do radio to do radio, and you pay them exorbitant salaries, and you get a building in the heart of some of the most expensive real estate on planet Earth. And then the people who are radio people, you pay them exorbitant salaries, and then they behave atrociously. That's how you get to $80,000 a day. A sound business model, it ain't.
Yeah, I just let's face it, everybody and their mother knows that you can squeeze a nickel until it squeals.
But you have to want to squeeze it.
Yeah, comes from all them Scots ancestors.
Yeah, yeah. Put down the glasses, you're wasting them.
Yeah. Comes from... If I was a somebody looking to invest, you know, if I was a liberal philanthropist and I wanted to put my money somewhere, I would look at how far you've gone on how little.
Oh, we are pros when it comes to making bricks without straw. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that an investor is going to want to do this because I want to survive. I don't necessarily want to be somebody's profit vehicle, because the day that we become a profit vehicle, Susan, we become the antithesis of everything that we have talked about wanting to be.
I know. Yeah, that's the issue.
And I refuse, in light of the amount of blood and sweat and tears that absolutely coat the altar of holy profit. I don't want to worship there.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. And you wouldn't be you if you did it. And what I was thinking of would be more of something along the lines of a non-profit type thing, where you could be you, but...
And we will explore that at some point.
An angel.
We'll explore that at some point. Of course, I need an extra 24 hours in the day. because the paperwork to become a nonprofit is monumental.
Well, the problem is if you become a nonprofit, then you can't be political.
No, that's not entirely true. I don't think we will ever be a 501c3, even though the foundation, for instance, that runs Pacifica is a 501c3. We'll never be a 501c3, but we might very well be a 501c4, because that is specifically designed to be for nonprofits who do political advocacy. The only difference being that donations and contributions to a 501c4 are not tax deductible, where contributions to a 501c3 are.
Ah, okay.
But the thing is, the percentage of what is tax deductible on a 501c3, it's not like if you give $1 million to a 501c3, you immediately write off $1 million. You don't get to. That ain't the rule.
No.
It is a percentage, and that percentage, among other things, is part of the debate that's going on in this country. The Obama administration wants to reduce the percentage of 501c3 donations that are tax deductible, and people are hollering that it will be a terrible blow to philanthropy in this country. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if they're right or they're wrong.
Well, I look at it this way. Are most of the people that are screaming right-wingers? If so, go ahead and pass the bill.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that.
Because if I will get you 10, they are mostly right-wingers. And what they're screaming about isn't so much philanthropy as tax dodges. What I want to see Barack Obama do is close all of those tax dodges in the Cayman Islands.
Not a bad idea. That's a good idea.
I want to see him shut them down completely. If you've got a tax address in the Cayman Islands, fine. You don't get any tax breaks in this country. In fact, you are now a foreign company, and we tax you accordingly. Whee!
Look, just actually taxing the corporations at the rate at which they are meant to be taxed would be a huge step forward.
Yeah. Make them pay their taxes. That just really irks me no end. Pay your taxes, folks. We have to, the average American. Pardon me, Joe. I don't mean Joe the plumber either. But your average American has to cough up his taxes, or he gets a visit from some yahoo with no sense of humor from the IRS.
Yeah, they're a real unfunny bunch.
Yeah, ain't it the truth? So, fine. Let these companies pay their taxes.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like an out there kind of idea to me.
No. I got no problem with taking exemptions, but I really object to them going out of the country so they can avoid paying taxes completely.
Yeah, and putting people out of work, that sort of thing.
Yeah. In that case, let's just tax them at a rate about 50 to 60%.
No, let's go back to the Eisenhower Republican tax rates for them.
Oh, 90%. That'd be even better.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Susan, great conversation. Good to hear from you this evening.
It was great conversation with you. Love to end this.
All right. You take care and say hi to Donald for us.
Okay.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan from Oregon. I have faith in her. She will become a magnate Ford stockholder yet, because I know what a determined woman she is. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. You like money?
I like money.
We should totally hang out. And hey, Spike, high fives, baby. That's good stuff.
Yeah, no little golf clap for Spike.
Nah, good stuff.
Yeah, the big noisy stuff.
Absolutely. That's just, yeah, I did the same thing. I just, I wonder where Bob's sitting at today. Oh, my God, he's ahead by more votes than he had yesterday. It's good stuff, buddy, good stuff.
And I guess they will announce the winners of the first round on, let's see, Tuesday, Friday.
Sweet. Sweet. Well, I can't see how, I read their little clauses of, what what they go into and what goes into selecting, you know, a scholarship receiver. And, I mean, net roots, I mean, come on now. Man, we're down here living with the grubs and the nematodes. I mean, it don't get any more than this. I mean, come on.
Man. I haven't heard nematode in a long time, Albert. And God knows I can count on you to, yes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you got to love a nematode.
That's something only a sage would say.
Oh, you make me blush. Got to get that pressure. I got to get them little that little pressure release like those shoes used to have. Anyway, you know, I tell you, Barack, did you check out Barack Obama's emails? Did you see that they're on? He's also funny in real life. Like he's hysterical. Yeah, he had some mention. It was in The Guardian, so I don't know if it's satire or anything like that. But as far as I saw, it was just real quick. I saw it before I called in. And, yeah, man, he's like, yeah, well, you know, if the white ringers are going to freak out and cry over me using, you know, a non-American condiment, you know, then I guess I'll have to go.
You know, I got updated on that. Our buddy David in Tennessee was kind enough to send that along because he caught me not being cognizant of that.
Okay.
And I'm just, like, jaw-droppingly stunned. But, of course, by the same token, I'm not. This is the Republican Party. They got... Hi, we're Republicans. We complain about mustard. No, really.
Yeah.
Mustard.
Yeah.
Mustard. We complain about mustard.
Yeah.
50 million people in America don't have health insurance. We complain about mustard.
It's just, I mean, and come on now. I mean, you know, I was listening to somebody on National Petroleum Radio there, and they were talking about the healthcare system, and they're like, oh yeah, it has to be efficient and this and that. And man, I was gonna give him a ring, and I should have, but I just didn't have the intestinal fortitude to manage it because, you know, they're gonna talk about efficiency when they're giving out, you know, and I'm gonna say it. I say it every day until everybody just is outraged regarding it. And I know everybody listening to the horn is, but maybe we got a couple new listeners here and there. And $1.5 billion retirement bonus. I mean, and you know, I used to think that getting a Brewster's Millions, you know, like becoming a billionaire, you know, if you become a billionaire, you're set. I mean, you're fine. I mean, as long as you're not an utter fool. I mean, you can literally go buy these Fendi handbags, you know, every day, and, you know, you can go do...
I want 10,000 rototillers. I want the largest collection of rototillers on planet Earth. Yeah, I know.
But, you know, the thing is, with $1 billion, you could do that and never run out of money. I mean, it's just such a giant, giant amount of money that... I mean, the interest alone on just a simple cash deposit of that money, it would just, you couldn't spend it. You just literally couldn't spend it. And, you know, we sit here with these freaks who sit here and, you know, hire up all these, you know, prop up the Sean Hannitys and the Rush Limbaughs and all these other scum. And they sit there and they're like, yeah, all I want you to do is, you know, harp on taxes. You know, I honestly, you know, there's so many things that we pay taxes on, as you know, and people go, you know, my peer group will bitch about taxes, and I just gotta look at them and laugh, because I don't really see taxes as a big part of our budget. I just don't. It's like, I like roads, I like them to be clear of snow and ice, I like schools, I like libraries, I like
fire departments. I'm real keen on fire departments and emergency medical responders. I just dig them.
Oh, and I wouldn't have a single, you know, it's like, it's real funny. My mom's out over here, and she's visiting for the month, and I'm trying to hold it together with my mind. But, you know, she has this friend, and they have all these health problems, and he got the flu, and now he needs dialysis and all this other stuff. And it's basically one of those things that he never went to go see. He never went to go to the doctor, just because it's like, essentially, you know, well, hell, yeah, I might be coughing up blood, but you know what? I'll live with it, because I don't want to hear that I have this or I have that or I have whatever, because, you know, that would just, you know, almost kill me. You know what I mean? Knowing that you have something or not hearing any news is good news to some people. And, you know, when we live in a country that's trying to talk about health care, we can't sit here and have this discussion without talking about preventive anything, and in preventive regards, screening. You know, if people were actually cognizant of, you know, their health, and they would sit there and, you know, go get checked out here and there. Not every time you get a sniffle. Come on, there's Afrin for that. But, you know, every time, you know, you got a
saline.
A little of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on, go to the doctor, check it out, because if we catch you early, you'll be all right. And it's a lot cheaper in the long run, and it's a lot, you know what I mean? Like, but it's one of these things that if you don't have health insurance, as I haven't had it, you know, for a number of years, and I have it now, and I kind of don't even want it. I'd rather just take the money that I blow, you know, the hidden tax of my, you know, health insurance of $300+ a month and everything else. You know, I mean, I'd rather take that money, put it in an account, you know, and put it in a savings account. Man, I get sick, I'm going to France, you know? I mean, and I'd still come back with some money in my pocket. I mean, I just, you know, if that's the kind of system.
Right, and, you know, you talk about that $300 a month, Albert. Is there anybody out there that thinks that not-for-profit healthcare would run that same $300 a month with the entire force and weight of the American people behind it? Because I don't.
No. Absolutely.
You know, if I go out, I try to buy healthcare, health insurance, for my, you know, for the Von Cade family broadcasters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking. I mean, I remember when I had to do it a few years back, and it was a few years back. It was $1,000 a month. Now it's probably closer to five.
Who the hell makes that kind of money? And if you make that kind of money, why would you complain about paying a little tax? I don't understand. I don't understand why it's...
If you make enough money to pay $5,000 a month for health care, are you really so simple, are you really such a conspicuous consumer that you're willing to piss that $5,000 a month away when you could have national single-payer health care for a tenth of that at least?
Seriously. I mean, seriously. And
you know, your for-profit, you know, what's your for-profit health care getting you, Albert? It's getting you some freakish bean, well, not a bean counter, but some freakish functionary whose very existence, and, you know, I'm not trying to be mean to the people who work in this, but they work in this industry, and their jobs are tied to performance bonuses that are tied to how many people they screw.
Absolutely. Just so they, you know, and then when they retire, they can go buy the brand new, and it's a gorgeous vessel if you've seen it. But, you know, just so they can go buy the $130 million Maltese Falcon, you know, part six or whatever it is. Have you seen that boat? My goodness. I mean, you know, yeah, why do we want somebody to cannibalize thousands of people in a career just so they can, when they retire, they can have this boat that they don't need or want, and just so they can visit it every week or every other month with their helicopter. You know, I mean, and yeah, man, we love a lifestyle of the rich and famous, but man, let's be serious, you know. Let's be honest with this crap. We're on this planet, and nobody, I don't know of anybody who deserves $1 billion or should have that much power.
Or has done anything that's worth that.
For real. I mean, for real. I mean, $1 billion. It blanks the mind. It literally blanks the mind. And, you know, and that's my biggest gripe. Well, one of my biggest gripes with Obama is, you know, he's just trying to, you know, float this system out a little bit more. And, you know, and you guys are talking about it with David and Susan, and, you know, you're sitting here and we're talking about how, you know, they wanted to squeeze every dollar out of the internet, and they're trying to shut the internet down. And, you know, quite beautifully, I don't ever think that will happen. I don't think that will ever happen. They do that, and then they're going to have some problems. It's like you can't take air away from somebody once they start breathing, or they're going to fight with you. You know, and that's kind of what the internet's been for, you know, the collective consciousness.
But, you know, Albert, you mentioned these sort of economic half measures, and as a liberal, I recognize that, you know, when we're continuing to play footsie with people who just, you know, spit in our faces when we give them all this money via, you know, the Wall Street banksters and so forth, but we scream at the idea of saving the job of somebody making $40,000 a year. I recognize how utterly just bass-ackward screwed our attitudes are in this country. But just to give you an example of how nutbag crazy the right wing is about all of this stuff, you know, there was a lot of talk when the stimulus was being considered saying, you know, not enough of the actual money is going to the people who actually need the actual money.
Absolutely.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that according to the Washington Post, that the stimulus funds that have gone to the states to help preserve jobs, you know, people working in state government that keep state government going, that, you know, make sure that the work gets done that people actually rely on, you know, people who work on, you know, those highways you like, and they drive the snow plows that you like, and they slide down the fire pole and go put the fires out that you like to have put out, that kind of stuff that we were talking about. It turns out that the stimulus package didn't have enough of that kind of money in it. And, of course, it didn't have enough of that kind of money in it. And at the time that it was being considered, people like Paul Krugman and Dean Baker were out there saying, guys, please, we're saying this real nice and friendly, like, there ain't enough of that kind of money in this. And the Wall Street banksters and their various and sundry corporate cronies are, no, we need the money. Right? Well, so the Washington Post puts this article out today. And how does the repig-lickin' we're worried about mustard party respond? Well, Albert, they responded by putting out a link on their repig-lickin' website called Look How Many Layoffs the Stimulus Created, because people are getting laid off, thousands of public employees, because the money's not there. Among other things, Washington State's going to lay off several thousand educators. Massachusetts just announced 250 layoffs, more likely to come soon, because there wasn't enough money in the stimulus, because these no-good, dead-from-the-neck-up, soulless, motherless, repig-licking bastards got in the way of real progress and got in the way of a real fix and got in the way of really mending some of the profoundly broken things about our culture, our society, and our body politic. And then when it is proven insufficient, where are they? Well, they get on their little web page and they put up something that says, look how many layoffs the stimulus created. Those dirty sons of bitches self-made, you know? Oh, Lord, I loathe them. I despise them. You get in the way, you cause the trouble, and then when things don't get fixed as quickly or as well, you complain about the program not working that you did everything in your power to keep from working. Jesus criminy.
No, that's bad jujitsu. That kind of jujitsu don't fly. That's the kind of jujitsu that literally, I mean, man, the thing is that with the squeeze on the guys with the race trucks and the Confederate flags in there, yeah, they may never not be a racist, you know. But, you know, hopefully one day that might happen. But, you know, one day they're going to sit there and it's here now. And they're going to look at these things and they're just, there's no way you can sit there and be that dissociated unless you're on PCP. I mean, and PCP people probably make more sense, you know, in the depths of one of them binges than they could ever sit there and ever imagine that, you know, you if you don't fund something and then all of a sudden they how do you sort of sit there and say, oh, see, we told you so? I mean, that's dividing by zero. You can't divide by zero.
You can't do that if you don't want more zeros. But see, the Repig-Lickin' Party is the zero party. Zero ideas, zero hope, zero future, zero policies, zero anything that does any good for those extraordinary Americans who carry the Repig-Lickin' Party's dead ass on their backs every blessed day.
Yes, sir. And you know what? The election of Barack Obama, the role the horn played in it, we said it way back then, all those 100 days ago, you know, that's just the beginning of the caning we're going to have to give them. This is just the beginning of the fight. You know, when we sit here and look at the magnitude of problems that we have, and everyone knows this, everybody sees this. You know, I mean, only the most depraved stormfront freak could even try to talk about anything else at this point. So when they, you know, when we have to stand here and look at the mess that we're in due to them and their nonsense. I mean, literal nonsense. You know, they talk about a tax, and all their little heroes. And they'll say, oh, we can't tax the rich, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can just let them make more and more money because they create more and more jobs. And, you know, meanwhile, the world's running out of oil, and it's running out of this, and clean air, and clean water, and this, and this, and that, and everything else in between, and running out of mountains. I mean, come on now. What the hell are we doing? What the hell do they think they're doing? We ain't falling for it. We've never fallen for this. And you know what? I don't think America's falling for this. I just don't. I don't think this is the world. This is not the timeline you thought it was. And, you know, they're going to pay. I don't think these guys, let's see, they lost Arlen Specter, Mr. Magic Bullet Theory. And he's probably going to retire, and we're going to probably see another Democrat elected into his seat. Norm Coleman and this nonsense, this just utter crap of what's going on over there is such a, what, metaphor? Is that what I'm looking for? It's just a metaphor for their entire party. They're literally hanging. That's why I'm glad. Oh, man, I'm really glad we didn't hear any more. Oh, yeah, let's go seize guns and let's do all these other things and let's become this, you know, let's not be mommy, you know, mommy on, you know, mommy's little helper and say, well, we got to go get guns, because that would have given them ground under their feet. That would have given them traction. And we definitely, I mean, not for nothing, as horrible as they are, it's still a lot more entertaining than it could be. You know, when Susan was talking about the internet being a pressure valve, and, you know, it's certainly much more complex than that, but it is in that way. It's a pressure release valve because more people can find out more information faster than they ever could before. And here we are looking at, you know, a literal, man, we're gonna rebuild the Democratic Party to boot. I mean, we're not gonna just be done with that. I don't hear that. I hear that on such a minority of Democratic left leaning type of people that post on forums and this and this and that. Man, I'm seeing people post crazy ramblings like I do, and it just makes me laugh. Makes me feel good that, man, people are really waking up to these horrible situations. This stuff can't fly. You can't show anybody any of those mountaintop removal sites and have them say, oh, that's a good idea. You know, especially once, you know, they talk about 500 acres of it, of the ash being dumped into their neighborhoods. You know, I mean, this is Wisconsin where I'm at, man. They can't even, you know, there's this firm in Indiana trying to get a concentrated animal feed operation with, you know, 3,000 cows and 80,000, you know, 10 acres of land out here. Man, that ain't going to fly either. These people out here, we don't want that. We know that, you know, think this H1N1 and all this other stuff, where do you think these come from? You know, they come from these big, giant animal...
Well, that's why I refuse to participate, Albert, with the corporate declaration that thou shalt not refer to it as swine flu. That's why, by God, when they said that, okay, I won't call it swine flu. I'll call it Smithfield flu, because that, by God, is what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this is something that we're going to have to pay attention to. I mean, you know, I'm sure a couple of my friends, they'll sit there, oh, it's going to die out. I mean, that's not how the flu works. Those genes that are in that flu bug are in that flu bug. They're there now. And they'll be assimilated into other, you know, strains of it, and we're just going to see even more mutations. And, my God, it can get very horrible very quickly. And we would be sitting there looking at, well, what did it? It's the same things that do it to the yeast in the wine barrels, and the same thing that does it to any type of organism in the test tube, that, you know, once they run out or once they start making practices that, you know, fail to keep them sustainable, hell, healthcare won't matter. You know, and then, you know, and that's a sad thing to me. I mean, I always try to look for the bright edge. I'm always trying to look for the silver lining. You know, no matter how dark the cloud is, you know, there's silver linings with peak oil, and there's silver linings with all this stuff. And, man, you know, not for nothing, this stuff needs to get funded. You know, we need to really have some, and you know, we need to have other people paying attention to it. You know, I just see we need some of these pencil pushers. All right, you know, get these corporate this and that in terms of taxes. You all know that these corporations need to stop getting all this welfare. They get more welfare than anybody. And this is, and then they're fun, you know, talkers that go on there and talk about, you know, welfare queens. Meanwhile, you know, their little supporters that I told you about, this guy, you know, he joins the military just to get the benefits, and when it's time, his time to go to Iraq, he runs off. Mr. Runway. He'll call up Rush Limbaugh so Rush Limbaugh can call him a great American hero because he joined in the reserves. But, you know, when the metal meets the grindstone, you know, they just flee. They run off. The sparks scare them like, you know, like they're howler monkeys or something, seeing some crazy aliens. They're done, Bob. They are done. And the more they ramble, the more they rant about nonsense and mustard. Dude, you don't like a nice spicy mustard.
No, that's elitist mustard. Plain yeller mustard is the only mustard Americans eat.
That's why.
And you don't eat it on a hamburger. It's for hot dogs and corn dogs at the county fair where they got family values. Sorry.
No, I know that mindset, and sure, they're still out there, but man, they're wrong. They're just wrong. I mean, they're just absolutely 100 billion% wrong, and I think the majority of people know it. I think, you know, even, you know, you look at any time they're going to try to do anything, you know, we're back to the internet here, but, you know, you look at what they try to do, man, that stuff ain't going to fly. Man, when they, like, for example, there's a website out there for torrents called Pirate Bay, right, and they're getting sued, and they just happened to lose a case just recently. But the thing about Pirate Bay is even if these guys go to prison, it will still be there. They don't even know anymore where their servers are. You know, and the thing is, this is the scene in Fight Club where we pull them into the bathroom. We grab his testicles and wrap a rubber band around them and then punch him in the face and say, you know, we cook your food. We take out your garbage. We protect you while you sleep. And you know the rest of the word.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, and you know, that's what we're going to be sitting here doing. And this is where, this is the world. They're going to see that. Yeah, the world's not going to be shaped according to the giants. You know, and George Soros, you know, I love how Bill O'Reilly loves to talk, you know, all this smack about how George Soros is this evil commie liberal, blah, 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 you know, capitalist. And, you know, because obviously, or unless he's a really super smart socialist communist that, you know, just knows how to, you know, make all, he's an evil genius, apparently, in his volcanic underground lair. But anyway, you know,
George Soros. Jesus, Albert.
Did you see that? Did you see the picture? That's how they paint the dude, you know? And, like, if you talk to somebody who don't know, I mean, that's how, you know, he's an evil genius.
Oh, I know. I got an email in here from our buddy Elaine up in Pennsylvania. And she tells me, Albert, she said, you know, I voted for you, too. But she said, and there's just a couple of different topics here that I'll go ahead and share the whole thing. She says, I can't afford much, but since you broke my progressive talk radio virginity last year, I've budgeted $7 a month for the horn and $6 a month for Mike. If I can do this on my scant disability, let's just say it's less than $700 a month, so can others. And, yeah, it would be nice to have you, Mike, and Tom in one place, at least for subscriptions. It would be nice to drag Nicole in, too. But she says, keep it up, Bob. I desperately need some sanity these nights. After dealing with docs and hospitals every week, this latest trip to Philly, this is the part, I was stuck in a car for 3 hours down and 3 hours back with a wonderful local extremist between last week the lady, she gives names and I won't, this lady and her freaking out about me going to hell and blindly following the Antichrist, otherwise known as Obama. I need a break. And you know those are real world stories. That person complaining about her following the Antichrist and the guy in the grocery store who looked at me and said, "Well, I hope these liberals who elected that Obama are happy with what they've done in the country." And the only thing you can do then is what I did and just look at him and say, "I'm so tickled I could just bust. I'm so proud he's my president." And he looks at you like he wants to say, "Well, you're white. What's wrong with you?"
So are you. What's wrong with you? Yeah. What's wrong with you? You know, why do you hate humanity? You know, why do you hate life? I mean, this is the thing. You know, yeah, that guy's a maniac because you're as white as it gets. You know, and not to.
No, I get a sun. No, it's true. I get a sunburn under the refrigerator light bulb. I do. I blister, man. I blister.
You're a big guy. You're lucky you're a big guy because you might have to deal with more. you know, bullies if you weren't. But the truth to it. And when it comes down to it, those guys are cowards. He's just sitting there. You know, I mean, he would have loved to hear you, yep, damn right, you know, but you didn't. You know, like that right there, man, you're sticking stem cells, you know, in a failed heart, you know, when you're in the middle of West Virginia and, you know, and somebody can't even say what they used to be able to say, not only probably 8 years ago, they could say those kinds of things and get a little bit of, ooh, yeah, you know, USA, USA, and that kind of stuff don't fly anymore. It's not flying in West Virginia, and you don't stand for it, and it won't fly if somebody tries to say some stuff like that to me. And you know that, it ain't happening. You just excuse me, you know, and I know a couple of friends are listening, probably laughing their little butts off, but, you know, it's just, they can't even say anything halfway remotely.
You know what I think I'm going to do? What our buddy Dave in Canada refers to as my portable government tracking device, my cell phone, has a little media player on it. And a tinny little speaker that makes the AM radio speaker in a 1973 Ford Pinto sound like a freaking klipsch. I'm just gonna have that thing permanently paused on that first breath before Patsy Cline sings "Crazy." And you know, when I hear that stuff, I'm just gonna bink "Crazy" and let everybody hear that and bink and turn it and put it away and walk out.
I like it. I definitely like it.
We've got to use the technology, Albert. We have the technology. We can beat back the wing nuts.
Well, true. I mean, you know, and this is, you know, and that's, I just got to bring it up again just to get everybody, even on the horn, to realize that us embracing technology is going to mean a loss of jobs. And I know this is not exactly where you were at with this, but I got to say this because it's important. However, the embrace of technology is going to open up new jobs. And, you know, it's like, yeah, all right, granted, people won't be sitting there, you know, making pintos anymore. Boo-hoo. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, why do we need this now? You know, people aren't going to be sitting there cracking. Maybe they're not going to crack as much, you know, high fructose corn syrup anymore. Boo-hoo. I don't care. We have a billion other things we need to get done. It's like me with, you know, I mean, it's like me with cooking, you know, and anything else like that. You know, if you start getting me sidetracked and you start talking to me, we're not eating until 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, not for nothing, this world has a certain type of time limit to it. You know, and I just kind of wanted to rehash just on terms of Soros real quick. You know, if Bill O'Reilly wants me to believe that, you know, Soros is this crazed liberal left-winger, you know, extremist, and they're not calling you a left-wing extremist or nothing, but, you know what I'm saying. You know where we stood 5, 6 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago. You know where we were, you know, compared to everybody else in the conventional thought. Now look at the conventionals kind of swinging our way, and the pendulum's coming back, so hopefully we can hold on to a little bit. But if they want me to believe that George Soros is this, you know, arch evil genius, then, you know, I'd love to see him fund $80,000 to the horn. And you know what? I'm going to see, and Kelly, if you're listening, just get your little papers ready and start writing up grant proposals to, I want you to do this, to the Soros Foundation. I'll tell you, I'm talking to her, I'm talking to you, but I'm talking to everybody. But listen to me, Kelly. Get that paperwork going. She knows how to do the grants, see? Get that stuff going. We want to see Bob with $80,000 because George Soros loses $80,000 in his freaking seat cushions on a couch in a house that he visits, you know, once every 10 years. $80,000, you know, if America can blow that in a day, Bob, you know what you could do with that in a year?
Oh, yeah, our buddy Reverbo, Albert, our critic at large, just dropped an email on me, and he's, you know, I love the Lanyap synergy, the whatever serendipity of all this, because he's on it too. He says, you know, Bob, I believe if you had $10 million or your number came up in the West Virginia lotto, when they asked you, what are you going to do with all that money, you're going to say with a straight face, I'm going down to the hardware store and take me a little harder look at that power buffer for the pickup, just like the one the vice president uses on his Trans Am. He says it's certainly something I would say when they asked me.
Mm-hmm.
Reverbo did survive his trek to the north, as he describes it. He has arrived safely home from D.C., and we're glad to know it. I don't know if you saw that thing on The Onion about
Vice President Parks' 1973 Trans Am in driveway and Gunn's engine. It was a beautiful thing. Yeah, that's a go find it. I sat there and laughed, but my stomach hurt.
I'm all over it.
Yeah, but you you touched on this, and I don't want to let it go for just a second. We're going to lose jobs. Look, the jobs are going anyway. Okay, I was on, and I'm not going to name any names or anything like that. I was on a conference call yesterday. And that issue came up. You know, how do we deal with the fact that people are going to lose jobs who are busy removing mountains? And the fact is, you know, the coal, the pollution industry in this state and in Appalachia has been very effective at terrifying everybody from, full on United States senators to members of Congress all the way down to county commissioners and individual laborers. Well, if we don't destroy where you live, you're going hungry. So there's your choice. Get poisoned or go hungry. Which way you won't die? And they've been very successful at making it. Well, those environmentalists want to take your jobs. But the fact of the matter is, I'm looking at a report right here that I got this morning from our pal Judy Bonds, one of the directors at Coal River Mountain Watch. I also got it from News Ninja Gene, who reads the Internet every day. Headline from Discovery News, okay, and it's from Discovery News, so for once it's not about a giant volcano that may erupt sometime day after tomorrow and destroy the earth. No, this is real. This is the real deal. Headline, coal supply may be vastly overestimated. And, of course, all of us in the coal fields, Albert, went, no, really? You think? Forget peak oil. A series of new estimates of the world's coal supply suggest reserves may be vastly overestimated, and if the planet isn't running on a majority of alternative energies within the next few decades, we could be facing an unprecedented global energy crisis. Yeah. So, I ain't taking no mountain remover's job. They're taking their jobs. They are blasting their way out of work.
Yes, sir. That's right. And
don't those little morons dare blame me for wanting to stop that from happening and start getting them good pay and work that doesn't poison the wives and children of not just them, but their neighbors and everybody who lives in their community. Don't they? Oh, no. I'm one of, they can try that with others, but I ain't going to put up with it, Albert. I ain't taking their daggum job. They are.
That's right.
And their bosses, an individual, it just crawls all over me like poison ivy. An individual mountain remover, Albert, can be responsible for as much as $50 million worth of coal a year, and they get $60,000 and they're happy to have it. Jesus, at least Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez have the common decency to look at the Steinbrenner family and say, oh, no, Holmes, you're giving me some of that.
That's right. I mean, no.
So, this jobs thing, when you say something like they're going to lose their jobs, let's remember, they're not going to lose their jobs because of anything that we are doing or not doing. They're going to lose their jobs because they have chosen an industry that is taking their jobs from them. And I'm just going to say this, and it may piss some people off, but that's okay. Their stupidity is not my fault. I know the skinny on what they're doing. The fact that they will not take the blinders off cannot be attributed to me and my efforts to make this place decent for the 10th generation of my family, the 11th, and hopefully 50th. Screw them.
That's right.
Screw
that.
No, hey, there. Wow, there's a bumper sticker. Screw the stupid.
Wake up, stupid. We need that too. I mean.
Yeah, maybe a bumper sticker, coal black with white letters that says, West Virginia, we're with stupid.
Get it done, Bob. Get it done.
Because you remember the T-shirt, just had a big thumb with the thumb pointing up with the finger pointing, either the left or the right, and you always wore it when you were going to be standing for a picture next to your vice principal in high school, and it said, I'm with stupid. Well, that bumper sticker, West Virginia, colon, we're with stupid, and a thumb pointing toward the logo of the Fiends of Coal.
They are.
Man, that'd get my tires slashed.
Well, go buy the post office tires. They're solid rubber. They'll just wind up stabbing themselves in the leg.
Yeah, they're made of the same stuff bowling balls are.
Hey, you'll get good mileage, but it'll be a little rough. You'll need some Tempur-Pedic pillows in that on your car seats. No. Yeah, no, you're right. And what I mean in terms of the job aspect, though, is the more we embrace technology, the machines can do things better than we can. And instead of a design, instead of paying, engineers, and even those guys are kind of stupid. They don't understand, that when you make a product designed to break in 5 years, you may think you're saving your job, but we live on a limited resource-based planet. We don't have a planet that can do all the things that you want it to do. It's no surprise to me. I mean, how can it be a shock to anybody to think that people who own all the resource will vastly overestimate what they think they can get out of it? You don't have to, you can find that in any aspect of any type of, job or industry or anything like that. People will always do that because they want you to think that, it's a stable thing that you're getting involved with. There's not that much coal. They'll even say this again, and I'm going to say it again. I'm just going to say it again because people need to regurgitate this when they hear this. When somebody says, well, we got more oil in Colorado and everything else like that, in the oil shale. My mother said that to me. I know, she did. She said it was what other people have told her. But that almost made me do backflips through a wall. There's more oil in the shale. I mean, ma'am, and I'll put
No, right that now, is, okay, movie reference. Ding, 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 ding. Movie reference. That's the second remake of King Kong, where the geologic team goes off to Skull Island to drill for oil. And the report comes back, well, is that all that oil out there? Are we going to be rich? There's tons of oil here. And I think maybe it was Jeff Bridges in the role. There's tons of oil here. It'll be ready to drill in about 60 million years. It ain't quite cooked yet. Yeah, tons of oil in that there shale.
Yeah, well, there is tons of oil in that shale. However, in order to get it, you have to, this is the other thing. You have to sit there and heat the ground up to 700 degrees. 700 degrees. Come on. And you have to put cooled water around it.
You mean fresh water that'll never be fresh water again?
Fresh water that doesn't exist.
Actually. Yeah, gosh, this sounds almost as nifty as liquid coal.
Liquid coal and absolutely. It's just these things are not sustainable. They're not feasible. We're better off trying to find trilithium crystals than we are trying to do any of this nonsense.
Well, I know where those are.
Oh, and let's get up there and get them. Come on now.
Yeah, those are on the little planet with the Lurignac on it.
Let's go get them.
And the cute little creatures that when one falls down, they show their fangs and turn on each other and tear it limb from limb. Yeah, that planet. We're going to love getting that stuff.
It's going to be fun, but you know what? I mean, when we sit here and look at what we're trying to do and everything else, it's just bass ackwards. I mean, it just is. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't, there's no sustainability involved with it. And sure, and this is one of those things that, these are the senators and the CEOs, and, this is what they're talking about. Embracing technology means a loss of jobs. It sure it does, but maybe that means that we've almost outgrown this system that we're in. This system that, requires us to have infinite growth. We can't have infinite growth on a limited place. So we need to, think of ways and embrace things that can actually, and there's a billion things, why I'm saying things, but, I can list off a few of them of things that we should be, putting our energies into. But, to imagine that we have a world that, we let, the 0.1% own 99% of the resources and then to think that they won't screw us out. And I don't understand. Like, those people are so dumb. They may be billionaires, but they're so stupid to think, where can they go? Where can they go? Where are they going to go hide? Where can you? The nearest star.
Well, don't you know, Jay Rockefeller has a nice little cabin in Pocahontas County, West Virginia, and they don't blow up mountains there, so he's away from it. Shh. But don't tell Jay he's not away from it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. I mean, come on now. Yeah. No, you're right. No, you're 100% right. He's not away from it.
Yeah, don't breathe that air, Jay.
No. Don't breathe the air. Don't.
You need you some Rockefeller air. Sadly, there ain't none.
Yep. There's none left. You know, you're going to have mechanically screaming. I mean, is that where you want to go? Everybody has to have breathing tube. I mean, come on. Everybody wants to look like, Mars. You had to go outside in Mars when it was Total Recall, but this is the Earth. I mean,
there was a great editorial cartoon in the Charleston Gazette today. Showed a couple of birds sitting in a bare, dead tree with a coal-fired power plant belching filth out in the distance. Across a vast and barren wasteland, both of the crows are wearing World War I gas masks, and one says to the other, "I feel a lot safer now that they stopped that windmill project."
No, I mean, not coal projects. Means to you, I just good, and I know what you know. The exposure that you're going to bring to these issues. I think it might just bubble up to right to the top of the forefront of the issues. And don't be shocked, Bob.
I hope I wasn't being rude when I raised the issue with Matt Rothschild. I'd love to see some massive coverage of mountain removal in the pages of the Progressive.
No, you can't do that. There's no way you can. No, it has to be said because people don't know it. If they don't know it, then, Gonzo, calm down. Calm down. It's just mommy. All right. My wife just pulled up, so he's all. Anyway, if you sit there and, if you don't bring up these issues to people, if you don't tell them, like my mom's friend that's, now sick, if you don't go to the doctor and find out that you got a problem, then when the day comes for the bill, you're going to sit here and pay this problem, and the price is not going to be something that you can afford. It's going to be far more than you can afford. It's going to be your life. It's going to be the entire species. It's going to be the entire, generations of human beings with just constantly losing brain power and this power and this power just so they can, talk about nonsense and have nonsensical objects from Walmart that don't give them anything.
And the next thing, we're all walking past the dude. Welcome to Costco. I love you.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. And yeah, sure, you want to make a store the size of, North Dakota? Please. Don't we have better things to do? Don't we have... My God, we're sitting on a rock, people. We're sitting on a rock that's spinning through space. We're spinning on a rock that's sitting and running through space. They talk about, and Joe Rogan made this little comedy bit, and he sucked it out of my mind one night when I was trying to sleep. And it's all right. He can have it. That's fine with me. I share. He can sit here and talk about this stuff, and, people will talk about, oh, did you see this? Did you know this? Did you know that? Who cares? Man, go look at a nebula. Go sit here and look at some of these aspects of, these hydrogen plasma clouds and all this other just mind-blowing stuff that's going on up in space. You go and you look at this stuff. And then try to imagine Angelina and Brad are interesting. Then you try to sit there and...
Yeah, it really does take the starch out of that, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And where does it put that starch? It puts the starch in saying, whoa, here we are on our spaceship here, on our little, Enterprise, and we can't be blowing up our mountains and destroying our rivers. And that's the other thing, is what gives anybody the right? Who thinks that they have the right to sit there and alter something that was there before they were born? And it should be there far long after they're dust.
You know what, Albert? You just took me somewhere. Looking at a nebula, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You just took me somewhere, and I appreciate it because I love the way this is expressed. So just check this out for a minute.
Just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 90 miles a second, so it's reckoned, a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day.
In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way. Our galaxy itself contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years. And our galaxy is only one of millions of billions in this amazing and expanding universe.
God, I love them.
Oh, comedians.
Yeah, because that's funny.
It's funny and it's true. I mean, you know, I know you can talk about truth, but that's facts. How about that? Or make Bob happy?
No Adam on no dinosaurs.
No Adam on no dinosaurs. No 6,000-year-old universe, and you know, and there's probably a lot of other things that eventually one day we're going to realize that even things that we think right now are very interesting on Discovery Channel happen to be completely 100% billion times wrong.
You mean the volcano in the Azores? Or the Canaries?
No, you know what? And that's not for nothing. I can sit there and I'll let them talk about geology for now. But I'm talking other things that, you know. But I think one day, you know, when we understand these things, if we are, and it's true, we...
Did you see the one about when the New Madrid Fault goes and Memphis dies and St. Louis?
And New York?
No, the New Madrid Fault.
That's my area. Yeah, I live on one side of that.
Yeah, you kind of do.
That'll be a fun ride. Because it did get a pretty nasty earthquake not even 100 years ago.
There were very few, not even 100 years. There were very few people living there then. But imagine the devastation that would happen if that earthquake happened now in Memphis.
Yeah.
Next on the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, you're going to die.
Yeah, you get the idea that the Discovery Channel is being programmed by that little demon guy from the Star Trek episode. The Mr. Regek, you're all going to die, ha, 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 die.
Well,
there's tonight's obligatory Star Trek reference.
Well, I was going to do you one up more, though, if you don't mind. Sometimes I think it's designed by Q, but...
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so we got old school and new school, too, going on. We got all of this.
You got to twist them, although you look beautiful in those sunglasses, I mean. Yeah, I'm talking to Bob. Uncle Bob. We're talking to Uncle Bob. Yeah, one day you'll find out what he looks like, because we're going to win the Powerball one day and bring you a big couple of sacks of cash. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do.
Gold bullion, if you please.
Certainly.
Let's get right out of that Federal Reserve thing. Hey, Albert, I got to roll along, hit a couple more blinkies. This has been a good one, brother.
Always, brother. And, hey, let's win. Round one is ours. Go, Bob.
Exactly. Thank you, Albert. Take care.
Be good.
Hey to the family.
Absolutely.
That's our buddy Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Onward we roll.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Gene.
You would have loved it. This is
Joe. Tonight. Oh, Gene? Joe.
No, Gene.
Gene, okay.
Yeah, you would have loved it last night.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It was great. You would have so got it. It was, I can't wait, all inspired, and it's like, oh, man, this makes so much sense, but either means I find it. It either means that all the other economic stuff that I couldn't understand is all a lie, or I'm completely stupid. I'm afraid it's probably. I hope it's not the latter. but it was great because he goes back to Aristotle, this American monetary guy, institute guy, and it's really interesting and it makes so much sense. So I had to throw that in there because I knew you guys would be looking and wanting to know how that meeting went.
Well, you show up for those things, Gene, and almost without fail, you're going to get something good out of it. There, And they're little hidden treasures that the crowd that's sitting around waiting for the next American Idol star will never get.
Oh, I'm for sure. I didn't know that. I guess the Greeks based their currency on iron, but to divorce it from the commodity aspect, so they wouldn't get their economy stolen by people that had more iron. They used to boil it, or just before it was ready to be set, they'd dip it in vinegar, which made it brittle, which meant that you couldn't use...
It was worthless to anyone who would pillage it?
Yeah. And it was only good for currency. It wasn't good in commodity, and it was all kinds of little facts like that. And it made so much sense. And I picked up a DVD and some contact information, and one of these days I'll rip the DVD. I'll rip the DVD or I'll get another one from him and mail it on to you or something. Cause it made sense. I mean, my eyes didn't glaze over. The only thing I didn't like is I had to kind of leave and take a personal break for like 20 minutes. Like, if I didn't have to do this, I would be right here. And it was great. I mean, if we can just get rid of this, the idea is you want to incorporate some of the Federal Reserve functions into the federal government or into the Treasury, and make sure the banks can't issue any kind of money anymore as far as making their own money, and then spending the whole thing on infrastructure. All those three things have to be done in order to make sure this doesn't happen again. But it was, I know I'm not making any sense.
No, it makes a ton of sense. And you know, the thing is, these topics, you know, most people think, oh, monetary policy, what? And then, you know, I don't want to watch that. My eyes would glaze over. Isn't there a rerun of Gunsmoke on somewhere? But it's fascinating. If you just open your mind to consider the possibilities, you will have the epiphanous experience that you had, Gene, and you'll be thinking and talking about it for days and weeks.
Well,
years maybe.
Well, there was another little fact that he said that really really kind of struck me is people, if, like, say you've got a currency, a local currency, or say you've got these libertarians, which he himself just, I don't think he cares for them very much. I mean, this would work really well with good liberal economics theory. But basically, people don't really consider whatever currency they're using to be actual legal tender money until they start paying taxes with it. And so,
then it's not nearly so much fun anymore.
Well, yeah, but that's true. It's not fun anymore, or it's maybe not as fun, but it might make things, because he was talking about, I guess, Ithaca, New York, which they've got those Ithaca hours, they ran into some trouble with their system, because the people that were running it, they, you know, they'd done it for years and years and years, and it was kind of time to move on. And they had one shop that wasn't able to exchange dollars in the amount they had been. So he actually went in and got probably the Ithaca City Council or somebody to actually use it as that you could pay part of your taxes with it, and it fixed it right up. But I mean, I learned so much. Anyway, I'll quit rambling because it's just. But I had to call in and let you know, because I'll put that link up in the chat here real quick so that people can go look at it again. Because it was really, really interesting. And like I say, if I can either rip the DVD or get another one, I'll ship it off to you.
Cool.
OK. Okay.
Well, thank you, Gene.
Sure.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye now. We have heard from both members of our News Ninja teams this evening. That, of course, Gene. Our News Ninjas operate out of sunny Oregon. Gene and Susan both. So I guess that takes us pretty close to the end of the program tonight. Still a ton of stuff to go over, but shoot, you know, we'll hit some of it maybe tomorrow night for prayer meeting. One of the folks who friended up with me at Democracy for America last night said, I'll keep listening as long as Bob keeps prayer meeting interesting. So, and I've already gotten a John Fox just shot me a really cool story for prayer meeting tomorrow night. I'm not going to spoil it. This is a beautiful thing. You're going to love it. And it's a happy story. It's a good story. It's a story that has a good ending. So we're already hard at work on prayer meeting for tomorrow evening. So thanks, everyone. Thank you for your participation. Thank you to the truth seekers, to folks, my friends in the environmental community. Thank you to the Horn family for doing what you did to put the Horn over the top. For the first round of balloting for the Democracy for America scholarships. Let's cross our fingers and hope we get one. Because cool things are going to happen in Pittsburgh if and we do. Thanks to you for your calls, your emails, your thoughts, your chat room participation, your participation on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com forums, fora. Look, that's all there for you. It's no fun if you don't use it. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/forum. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Make use of it. You, after all, helped build it. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, among so many other things. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man, most overworked man in liberal talk, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything that the Horn does is a financial struggle. Everything that Ben does is a financial struggle. And it is always worth bearing, that is always worth bearing in mind because just as Matt Rothschild described the way that the Progressive magazine has lasted for 100 years, that's what we need in order to keep the Horn going because there isn't a corporate sponsor. Only you and Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know who help bring you these programs. They do that because they understand the necessity of having this kind of conversation available. They spend every day tirelessly fighting upstream from all of us because they know that all of us are, in fact, downwind and downstream. And they will do it as long as they have strength to continue. And hence my vast admiration. Thanks to everybody who moderates in the chat room, who moderates on the forum, who keeps the website going. Thank you for your emails. Thanks to Horn intern junior grade Ferg, who answered some of your phone calls this evening. You did something. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is only fitting that this program this evening begin with gratitude and thanks. Well, something amazing happened last night. No, I didn't win the lottery or anything, but that, from where I stand, this felt like a whole lot like it. Really. You know, for several days we've been talking about the Democracy for America scholarships to Netroots Nation. And I explained that a component of the selection process had to do with online voting. And John Fox and ELO put up easy links at the headonradionetwork.com site so folks could use that and go and vote for, well, it's under my name, but it's the horn that's going. And we were, the word went out into the environmental community. The word went out all over the horn. People were telling their individual friends, asking for votes. And then last night, something happened. So we closed the program at about 9 p.m. last night with something like 74 votes and 7th place. And that is when our buddy Spike, whom you've heard on the program a number of occasions, gonzo greetings, he says, Spike. Our buddy Spike took it upon himself to contact our dear friend Mike Malloy, asking Mike to ask the Truth Seekers to help put our candidacy, our application, if you will, over the top. And wow, did they ever. By the way, if you're one of those voters from the Malloy Truth Seeker crew who has never heard this program, and you might be checking it out for the first time, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. From all of us at the Horn, thank you. Because doing what we hope to do at Netroots Nation is going to take a cooperative effort. I'm going to be there. I have hopes that Guy James will be there. The whole the Kincaid whole fam damily will be there. And it is our hope to bring you every uttered word from every session of every seminar, every discussion that takes place at Netroots Nation. It's going to take a whole bunch of work that hasn't even begun to be done yet. But last night we took a massively substantial step forward. Thank you. Thanks to the good offices and good graces of Mike Malloy and Kathy Bay and of all the dedicated folks who share their time with them from 9 to 12 Eastern every night. You know, I'm one of those people. I've been one of those people for years. I was a Malloy truth seeker long before I climbed back behind the microphone and decided to give radio one last good swing. So our buddy Spike, the initiative he showed was just amazing. And then the truth seekers, who decided they wanted somebody to whom Mike gave recommendation to be at Netroots Nation. Let me explain what happened. Let me go. Let me just go and see what the numbers are looking like right now. Pardon the clacking. No, there's no Y in Netroots Nation. And that's not even where I'm going. DemocracyForAmerica.com. This is the boring part of the program because Bob can't type and talk at the same time. At the beginning of the night last night, we were, at the end of the show last night, we were at 74 votes. And just hoping to sort of maybe crack the top four. As it stands now, and supposedly voting closed at midnight Eastern time, and if that's the case, we came out clearly number one. But the votes continue to climb. And we went from 74 then to, as I speak, 304 votes now. And it was a humbling, exciting thing to behold. A lot of other good people pursuing these scholarships as well. It's my understanding that Democracy for America will choose at least 9 scholarship winners. Winning the first round of online support is not by any means an indication of outright victory. There are other criteria that are put into use as well. But this has to count for a lot, I would hope. From 74 to 304. Wow, I can't even begin to do the math. That's 230 votes? That's astonishing. And so thank you to everyone, and especially the truth seekers, who helped make this happen. We will do everything in our power to live up to your expression of your support. You have my word on that. Now, let's see. Juanita chimes in. Wonderful. Hooray. Thank you, Mike Malloy, for your assistance. I'm so happy for you, Bob. That from Juanita, our Central Florida View correspondent. And it's, like I said, it's gonna take a lot of doing to get there. It's only, you know, what, 3 hours from here to Pittsburgh? It's a nice drive up straight up US 19 and then straight up I-79 and bang, you're there. Pop out of the, what is it, the Fort Pitt Tunnel? Pop out of the Fort Pitt Tunnel.